the fuck is that guy?
Two legs, two arms. Normal.
There was a bus that pulled up to a red light, and Little Nog tried to feed it a carrot while Big Nog was petting it. He thought it was a horse.
And he threw a big pity party for himself, crying on camera and shit. It's fucking just ridiculous.
Oh, no, this guy, look at it. They knocked the bucket over. This is the Three Stooges. What are you freaks doing? Everybody's booing. Now there's even more pressure. Oh, now they're sweeping it out. That's good.
They're selling you all wolf tickets, people. You're eating them right up. George here is selling you wolf tickets. Dana here is selling you wolf tickets. The UFC is selling you some wolf tickets.
Not for gay Jesus, people!
I was just like, I need to have his babies. I need to stay alive.
I have a huge gut, Joe.
It's too big.
It's too big.
Like, beast in his home.
But I'm not impressed by your performance.
What's going on?
I don't know, I tried to call you, and I think you tried to call me, and I'm not really sure what happened, but it worked.
Yeah, I hear you fine.
That's good, then. It means it's working.
Yes. Welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt. That fine young gentleman on the other end of the line is Michael Coughlin. We talk about MMA and stuff on this here show. Not a lot of real MMA events or news going on in that world, but there's always something to talk about. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah. There's something, I'm sure. Although, I will say, this has been the worst month ever. There's been no shows.
Right. Have you watched any of the Dana White Contender Series?
Oh, yeah. I forgot that's on. No, I haven't.
So technically you could get some MMA action, and if you really wanted to, if you were hungry enough for it.
Well, I guess I have watched it. I just have no idea what's going on with it. Like, I'll turn it on sometimes if I am bored, actually. I have the prelims from the last pay-per-view on right now, so it's all the same.
I gotcha. I haven't watched it at all either. I've seen highlights and some clips of Snoop and Uriah drinking and smoking weed and stuff, but I haven't actually sat down and watched the entire, I think it's like a 2-hour show, right? I've never done that.
That's my thing, is like, it's just too long. I shouldn't really say it's too long, but as far as keeping up with it, I thought it was going to be like a half hour deal, but no, they're really doing like a full fucking show.
Mm.
I guess they're making money. It's their company, but It's a bunch of fucking local guys fighting or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be cheap for them to produce it. They're just using the gym, but I think they're taking a break from it while they film the next Ultimate Fighter. That was kind of the vibe I got. They would probably be doing one or the other from that gym and from that studio. When Ultimate Fighter is being taped, there's not going to be the Dana White Contender Series and vice versa.
Yeah, all right. I mean, it's all a bunch of shit that you watch if you're bored at best.
Yeah, I haven't really watched it at all. Let's start with Mayweather-McGregor then, because that's what always gets the most press.
I'm
going to
turn on that Contender Series thing now, because I'm kind of interested.
Supposedly Paul Felder's pretty good as he must be the color commentator, as the color guy. I've heard he does actually like a surprisingly good job with it.
Well, I won't be listening to anybody as I watch it.
Anyway, maybe that's in comparison to Snoop and Uriah anyway. He seems really good when you have the two options.
Sure. I mean, whatever. It doesn't matter why you look good as long as you look good.
That's right. So Mayweather-McGregor, the Nevada State Athletic Commission today approved the request of Floyd and Connor to sanction their boxing match in 8-ounce gloves. Typically, any boxing match, I believe, over 147 pounds is fought in 10-ounce gloves, and maybe the bigger guys are even 12-ounce. But usually 147 is the cutoff. 147 and under fight at 8-ounce, and bigger guys fight with 10-ounce. In this case, the Floyd-Connor fight is going to be held at 154 pounds. So they had to go before the Nevada State Athletic Commission and get permission to use 8-ounce gloves. For what it's worth, In Floyd's entire career, he's only fought once in 10-ounce gloves, so he's more used to fighting in 8-ounce gloves. Most people view this as giving Connor an edge because he's used to, you know, the smaller MMA 4-ounce gloves, and maybe he'll be able to sneak punches in because the gloves are smaller, whatever. Most people see it as an advantage for Connor, but for Floyd, this is just normal. This is what he always fights with.
Well, yeah, that's really a function of Floyd's weight. I believe the rule is, yeah, 147 is a cutoff. Below 147, I think it's like 147 to 130-something. If the smaller fighter elects, they'll use 10-ounce gloves. Otherwise, they use 8-ounce gloves. And then, so to me, it's really kind of like 147 is like really not for... So again, the point being that it's generally this weight they should be in 10-ounce. None of this matters. It could be 4 ounces. It could be bare knuckles, and you know, it could be, you know, dipping your hands in honey and glass. It's not going to matter at all. It's right. Just a nice little diversion, a little talking point. In theory, it favors Connor because smaller gloves always, not always, but usually favor the power puncher. And let's say if he's going to win, it's going to be because he's a power puncher. Sure, shit, not going to be anything else, unless Paulie Malignaggi gets in there, I guess. So, it's part of the circus and the sideshow. Lap it up and laugh and go, there we go. They're now talking about the size of the gloves. It's so out of pro wrestling from the 80s. Like, oh, we're going to, like, everybody's going to go back and forth. I want it in this cage. I want that kind of cage. Like, just so weird to see people arguing over these really dumb, minute details, and nobody could possibly give a shit, but here we are, and ESPN's bored, because nobody likes baseball in August.
Were you surprised that the Nevada Athletic Commission sanctioned it, allowed it?
The moment that they decided to take a vote on it, I'm like, well, I guess they're going to do it.
Did you watch the hearing?
No. I just know that before the hearing came out, they were all, we'll look at it with the health and safety of the fighter being first and foremost our concern. Yeah.
Which clearly isn't the case, because the Association of Ringside Physicians wrote a letter to the NAC asking that they deny the request because they have these rules, because who knows if it's really truly protects the fighters or not, but that's why the rules are in place. You could argue the validity of that, whether or not an 8-ounce or a 10-ounce glove is going to help with head trauma or whatever it might be. But the idea is that these rules are in place to protect the fighters. And these physicians' job it is to be ringside physicians at fights, right? This is the Nevada Athletic Commission. They don't even mention it at all. It doesn't come up once. They don't bring it up. And one of the guys even said something to the effect that, I feel like we're being used for a publicity stunt, but this one time I'm going to let it go. It was like, holy shit.
Well, good for him for doing it, I guess. Look, it's all shady as shit. The fight should never have been booked in the first place. Beyond that, it's really not as bad as it probably could look on paper. Yeah, it's an inexperienced guy with a great pro and all this stuff, but Connor really is a unique circumstance here. Like, you know, it really, any high-level mixed martial artist, you could say, yeah, this person doesn't have the skills to compete, but I don't really know if athletic commissions should be involved in how much skill someone has so much as their preparedness and all that. Like, Connor, if he gets hit, it's not going to be like if you or I got hit by a punch, you'd be like, oh, no, what's going on? Like, he's a real pro. He knows what he's doing. And, you know, having 8-ounce gloves, the fact that they don't listen to the doctors at all is embarrassing on its own. When you add in a guy saying, yeah, we're being taken for a ride here, but let's just go with it. Like, holy shit, dude. You can't do that. You're the government. The government can't, like, can you imagine if, like, during the OJ trial, the judge was like, look, I know this is all part of a publicity thing, but it's going to be way better if I just say he's not guilty. Let's just go with it. Like, no, you have a job to do, you assholes.
Do you think if either fighter got seriously hurt, which granted, chances are Floyd's not going to get hit much at all, and Floyd doesn't hit hard enough where he's going to, like, truly damage Connor, you wouldn't think. I mean, anything can happen. But if let's just say one of them gets starched, gets a really bad concussion, whatever, brain hemorrhage, something wild, like that you rarely almost never see happens. Will anything happen with the athletic commission for allowing it to be an 8-ounce glove? Do you think there could be any bad publicity for them if something like that happened?
I actually, beyond bad publicity, there could be legal liability for what they've done there. And, I mean,
if Connor's the one that gets hurt.
Yeah, I mean, should there be? Probably not, because I actually believe the 8-ounce gloves are safer. They probably will lead to the end of the fight quicker. I don't think it's going to make a knockout happen any faster, but it could make the fight end sooner due to, you know, a broken hand or something like that. So I actually think they are safer. But that doesn't matter, because I guarantee you, and you tell a lawyer that here you got a guy who's, we'll say, you know, whatever, 28 years old, with an earning potential of hundreds of millions of dollars, which you can demonstrate very easily, and he volunteers to do this, and the athletic commission, which is supposed to oversee his safety, not only do they have their own doctors saying don't do it, so they're ignoring their own doctors. All kind of has to do is be like, hey, your doctor said this isn't safe. We don't need an expert. Your expert said don't do this. And then they flat out admit, I don't think we should be doing this, but what the hell? Holy shit. Like, I don't know what the damages really could be, because who knows? I mean, but yes, if Connor did get hurt in some sort of weird, fluky thing like that, oh, this could bankrupt the state of Nevada. It could be so bad. Like, this is really stupid. It won't happen, but
right.
Holy crap, man. Again, you're the government. You have responsibilities, you asshole. You can't do these things. But they did, and I'm glad they did, because of course they did for this fight. Everything has to be weird with this thing.
Well, it gets back to the thing we've talked about, you know, over the last year or years, or however you want to define it, in that the Nevada Athletic Commission is not only beholden to, you know, the fighters and the rules in place, but they're also beholden to make, I don't want to say make a profit, but they want these big fights in Nevada because they get tax revenues and people stay in their hotels and gamble in Vegas, and they make a lot of money when they have these big money fights in Vegas. So they're going to do everything they can to allow fights like this to happen, even though it might be against the interests of the fighters.
Yeah, and, I mean, look, that's not necessarily unique to Nevada, although it is in their situation, because, you know, all government's going to have some, they're always going to be in bed on, to some degree, good or bad, with, you know, the business interests that they're regulating, because, of course, they are. You're going to be talking to the people and know, like, you do enough business with the other side, unless, you know, it's literally, you're fighting child molesters. Over time, you're going to see the same people in the same meetings. You're going to be like, hey, bud, anyone going to cough a cup of coffee? And, like, you're going to kind of know the other guy isn't bad. I think that the problem comes in here with Nevada is that it's fucking casinos. Yeah. You know, you got casino money. There's something really, it seems different. Like, it's just blatant. Like you said, or quoted there, you know, guy basically saying, ah, fuck it, we're just going to do it. It's good for publicity's sake. Like, that doesn't exist. It's, like, the only government, I think, in the United States at least, where on some level they understand the idea of hyping shit. Like, the whole city of Vegas is built around promoting and doing it for one fine thing, or, yeah, this would be good for publicity. Like, nobody, like, yes, all politicians want publicity, but for themselves. You don't think these politicians do things to be like, you know what, I don't really know if this is a good idea to have a bridge here. Fucking McDonald's is going to look great, so we're going to do it. Like, it doesn't happen. It's just bizarre. But again, it's all part of the show, so let's spend $100 in 2 weeks.
For what it's worth, the direct quote, this is the chairman, Anthony Marnell. I do not like the Nevada State Athletic Commission being used as a pawn in a social media bout. Between these two, that part of this request pisses me off. This body is not the subject of two fighters to create social media stir and other controversy to sell tickets and to sell DirecTV. But then he goes, okay, let's do it. Anyway.
I mean, first of all, what's great is, I mean, on every level, that's amazing. Okay, let's do it, which is so great. And again,
I added that part.
Oh,
right?
Damn,
that
it.
Was me. That was me.
Oh, but, I could have seen it, though, man. It's Vegas.
Yeah.
But also, screw that dude. Guess what? It didn't have to be a thing. All you have to do is put out a fucking press release saying, we received this, and where the commissioners spoke to one another, and here's the record. Yeah, it's been approved. Like, you don't have to make a big dog and pony show out of it, asshole. You're the ones that allow the cameras there. You're looking at them and playing to them and telling the world that if you smoke weed, you should be suspended for the rest of your life, you morons.
Hey, I have a question for you. As far as, like, the glove sizes, the 8 and the 10 ounce, is it more like the padding inside the gloves or how big the gloves are? Because I was always kind of under the impression that it's easier to, like, slip punches. Like, when you're talking about a sport where it's a fraction of inches and you lose, you know, 20% of the weight of the gloves, you're obviously going to lose some, like, surface area as well.
Yeah, it's the size of the gloves. I use these 16-ounce gloves. I just, like, they're, like, awful. Like, God, they're just, like, you know, literally pillows. Like, I didn't like them because, no joke, I almost couldn't tell if I was hitting things. It was so weird like that. So I always felt like my wrist wasn't comfortable. So, yeah, the gloves themselves will be physically smaller. Again, not a huge difference. And given Floyd's comfort with that glove size, it won't matter. Okay, it doesn't matter. None of this matters. None of this matters. Floyd is going to kill him. We can't fall for the stupid trap.
I'm not.
Damn it.
I'm not.
I am.
I'm just saying, in theory, it, when you're talking about fractions of an inch, that's all you really need sometimes.
No, there's no theory. There's no in theory. They want you to say in theory. This all rests on in theory. There's no in theory. Conor McGregor is not a boxer, and Floyd Mayweather is the greatest ever at what he does. This is stupid. There's no in theory. It's like in theory, if I'm playing baseball against Roger Clemens, and I have a corked, if I have a corked bat, in theory, that gives me a little bit better chance of hitting a home run. But I'm not going to hit a fucking home run because I'm not a baseball player, and he's Roger Clemens. So,
But how do you explain Conor McGregor beating Pauly Malignaggi for 12 straight rounds in sparring? He won 12-0, Dana White says. How do you explain that?
Well, you see, Matt, there might be a flaw in my logic. I may not be able to explain everything. You know, sometimes, well, as Churchill said, I don't know if it was really Churchill, but somebody said it, I reserve the right to change my opinion as the facts change, or something like that. I didn't change my opinion, the facts change, something like that. Oh, just go on with the story.
Well, what did you talk about that at all last week, that whole... McGregor.
I don't think that.
No. Okay. So even though it's probably
old. You're not
I think I did, but that was a week ago. I can't remember that long ago, and I don't know when things necessarily happened. Did that happen before you recorded or after? Anyway,
Trump speed, man. The whole world. It's not light speed. It's Trump speed. We have no idea what's happening anymore. Ooh, I like that.
So what? Long story short. Pauly Malignaggi, Nagy, however you want to say it. I've heard it said multiple ways. We're just going to call him Pauly. Came in to spar and train with Conor. He was paid to do so. They put him up in some house in Vegas with other guys Conor was sparring with. And he's like a two-time world champ in boxing. He retired this year. I think he's like 35 or 36. And he essentially sparred with Conor twice. And the second sparring session, they went 12 rounds, and Malignaggi claimed he got the better of it. Conor claimed he did. There was a picture on Twitter with Malignaggi on the ground looking like he got knocked down. He claimed he was shoved down because Conor was frustrated, and Conor just shoved him. Then a day or two later, Dana White releases a video, I think it was on Instagram, which was really like strangely edited from weird angles, but it didn't look like a push, but it didn't look like Conor really landed a good shot on Pauly either. So it was kind of like the Zapruder film. What really happened here? I can't tell. Was there a magic bullet? What's going on? So Malinagi's claiming Connor's shady, cheap, and dishonest, and a lousy boxer. McGregor saying he put a beating on him, and that's why Malinagi left the camp, was because he was concussed and couldn't handle it and was getting his ass kicked. And then, like, the next day, Dana says Connor beat Malinagi 12 rounds to none and called him a liar. So, I mean, what's your take? Obviously, you watch the video. You think the truth somewhere lies in the middle, or who's full of shit?
I mean, it's awesome how all parties involved just immediately went to circus mode on this shit. Paulie just doubled down. I didn't get hurt. He came up with all these... He came up with very odd... I don't want to say odd excuses, but things I wouldn't have expected to hear, per se. I actually thought he might go out there and nothing would come of this, but something did come of it, which I guess I shouldn't really be surprised, but they all went into it. Does the truth lie somewhere in the middle? Yeah, probably. I when I look at what happened there, you know, the brief 20 seconds of video we get or some shit, the one thing I try to take away from it is, by everybody's account, they boxed 12 rounds, and Paulie Malignaggi is a legitimate multiple-time world champion. He's not Floyd's level or anything like that, but he's a guy that, when he was at his best, could have fought Floyd, and it wouldn't have been the biggest joke fight or anything like that. So he's a very good professional boxer. And after 12 rounds, it looked to me... I mean, Paulie said that Connor won the last two rounds, and he blamed it on cardio, which might be true, but it still says something that Connor can tire out, you know, a really good boxer over 12 rounds. Because that doesn't happen usually in events. Like, if you train with a black belt in jiu-jitsu, it doesn't matter if he's out of shape. He's going to beat you unless you're also really, really good. And so for Connor to kind of even, you know, what we did see of him, his punches looked fine. He looked kind of crisp. It looked like he hit Paulie with something. I don't believe that Connor just beat his ass 12 straight rounds, because I have a feeling if that happened, they'd be releasing a lot more footage. I don't know why you'd have, 12 times 3, 36 minutes of action of Connor being a badass, and you edited it down like 13. Seems kind of weird. But although Dana did point out that he's not Steven Spielberg or whatever, so we'll see. It doesn't matter. He's still going to lose to Floyd. And he's not going to fight Paulie in a boxing match. So maybe Paulie goes to MMA. That, I think we talked about that before, and that would be awesome. That was your great idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would... That's almost what I see happening next. It's like they're building something here. Because the whole storyline is odd, because Paulie was dissing Connor like 6 months ago, saying he had no hope, the fight would never happen, it's a publicity stunt, yada, yada, yada. And then he goes into his camp, and Connor's like, what did he think was going to happen? I was just going to, he was going to be able to talk all that shit, and then I wasn't going to really box him or whatever. So the whole storyline is odd. Malinagi making fun of, like, the accommodations McGregor had set up, calling it a crack house, and that he got off the plane, and then the next day he had to spar 12 rounds, and pro boxers never spar 12 rounds, and they were trying to embarrass him, and Dana and Lorenzo and all these people were there to watch the next day, and, like, he's claiming he was essentially set up by Connor, when he was only just going there to help him train and get better and prepare for Floyd. So Malinagi's got this storyline going where he's just there to help, he's innocent, and Connor's setting him up. And Connor's saying the exact, I don't want to say opposite thing, but has a completely different story. And I feel like both of them are spending a lot of time and energy on this, putting out pictures and videos and hyping it up. And this has more hype and talk about it more so than even Floyd. The Floyd fight, I feel like, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I believe I read something Connor making allusions to this idea himself, but Connor's doing all the heavy lifting on promotion. Like, he's doing just a ton. I mean, Floyd actually is doing more than almost any of Connor's opponents have ever done, but Connor's just doing all kinds of stuff. I think Connor's running with everything. it seems odd to me to think that this is setting up. I guess it could be setting up a fight in the UFC, you know, an MMA fight, but it does seem weird just in the real world to actually work things. Like, this is real fighting. Like, you know, angles, like,
right,
pro wrestling with a fake story. Like, there should be some truth to the story, but it does make a lot of sense. If Paulie was saying, I didn't hear the part where he's saying he was criticizing the conditions of things.
Yeah.
That's where, honestly, when you said that, that's where I immediately go, okay, this is all a work. Because there's no way Conor McGregor has poor training facilities. Like, seriously, you think Conor or UFC or any, you think these guys are training in anything but, like, 24-karat gold?
Right. He was claiming that the house, like, he had set up for all the fighters was, like, a shithole, basically.
Like, come on. Like, Conor's going to do that to me. Yeah.
I'm skeptical. I'm just saying that's part of the story. It feels like it's building. Do you know what I mean? Like, why waste all this time if you weren't going to fight? Like, Paulie went on, like, a press tour after he left the camp. He was on, like, every radio show and TV show. He was doing, like, local news and, like, New York, like, ABC affiliates. And he was all over the place. It was crazy.
Well, you know, a possibility is that, again, Conor always is in work mode. It doesn't matter. And Paulie
maybe fell for it?
Not necessarily fell for it so much as he's still new at what he's doing. Like, he's obviously getting better. He's been doing it for a while, but he's not entrenched as an announcer. And I think, you know, I suspect he wants to do what he can for his own career. And on some level, talking a lot about this, putting yourself in there, he's raised his profile a lot. Like, of everybody involved in this whole thing, he's probably raised his profile the most, or Brendan Schaub. But, yeah. You know, and the more he's in the limelight like this, the better it is for him as an announcer. I don't know if he gets more money, but he definitely probably feels a little bit more job security.
And then the other factor is, too, if this truly is a work, a fight in the UFC might make sense for Paulie, too, because he's older, he retired from boxing, and to get how many buys would Paulie Malignaggi versus Conor McGregor in the UFC do? Do you know what I mean? Like, to me, like,
yeah,
that's 2 million buys. Like, right now, the way everything's going, that's a huge show. Conor's the biggest draw. They've got this built-in feud. After Floyd beats Conor by decision, Malignaggi can get in the ring. You know what I mean? Like they could hype it up and make money off that fight in the UFC. Would people see through it? Yeah, we would, but I don't think most people watch close enough to even see that they've been hoodwinked the whole time.
No, it really does, with the exception of Paulie has concussion issues, so I really don't want to see him fight again if he doesn't have to, and he is an announcer now, so maybe he should dedicate himself to that 100%. But otherwise, it makes a lot of sense for everyone involved, because Paulie, again, was a very good boxer. He kind of stood out from the pack because he was very, very fast, had some kind of slick-looking moves, kind of Ali shuffle thing, and he had a personality because he's from somewhere on the East Coast, New York or something like that, like one of those. I mean, I was going to say they're New York, New Jersey, or Philadelphia, but there's always, like, amongst all three of those cities, there's this same dickhead that resides in that same kind of punky attitude. Anyways, but yeah, I mean, that all said, I don't know what his career earnings are, but I'm sure I feel comfortable saying that he probably spent most of his career in what I would call the very, very good but not great paydays of UFC fighters, probably in that like $1 to $3 million range. So he's probably someone that if you said, hey, you want to do the fight, give you $1 million, that's probably enough for somebody like him, as opposed to, like, I would say a Zab Judah or somebody like that who I imagine had, you know, hits the real, real big paydays, and they don't need to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he had some big fights. He actually beat Zab Judah. It depends what the show did for buys, too. I mean, I think they gave, half a mil.
James Toney?
Yeah, James Toney. I think his base pay was $500,000 for that Couture fight. And you know a fight with Conor at this stage, with the build and everything, would do, you know, four or five times, whatever.
And they'd be the main event.
Right.
And, again, it works really great. And as a fan, I would be interested only in a very shallow, sad sense, because it would feel like some vindication to see a top-level boxer getting there in MMA and be like, by the way, this is what really happens for real fights.
Yeah.
Even when we're talking to other people off mic.
Sorry.
Also, I'm watching the Contender series.
Yeah.
And there's these two chicks fought, and one chick was pretty good. She's in blue, and she looked athletic. And now there's some dude, his name is Jamie Alvarez. They said he was on Henry Cejudo's team on Ultimate Fighter.
Looks probably like Jaime.
Could be Jaime. Damn it. But he doesn't look Mexican at all. Like, he looks like a white boy. Like a Nick Diaz type Mexican. Anyways, but he looks just like Cody Garbrandt. It's really weird.
Huh.
They're fighting 125 pounds, and he's fighting a dude that looks like Eric Koch when Koch first came to the UFC and had a shaved head and looked like an alien.
Those were the days. So I know we talked about this in the past, and I say that all the time, but remember that fight-fixing scandal with Tae-Hun Bang? He's been indicted for alleged fight-fixing. Same thing. Did you see that story?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think that means? Do you think you're in good shape if you're going on trial in South Korea for fight-fixing?
Well, being a legal expert who knows nothing about Korea, I think that... I guess that's, you know, it's probably not good to get indicted in Korea, but if you're living in Korea, you've probably had more important things to think about lately, so maybe this is a bit of a welcome relief, kind of like a, oh, that wasn't such a bad day after all, was it?
According to TokoreaHerald.com,
which we all read every day, yeah.
Is no longer a UFC fighter and will go to trial without being detained.
That's all the news that's fit to print, and then you can read it again in 15 minutes. Yeah, I know, different culture, but it's all Asian food.
Also indicted are several brokers who allegedly set up the fix, including MMA fighter Daewon Kim. So, yeah, he's been indicted. He's got to go on trial. Bang admitted he tried to fix his bout with Leo Kuntz. It's not Kuntz, it's Kuntz. Only to later change his mind after being warned by UFC officials. He allegedly accepted a bribe of approximately $87,000 while wagering approximately $43,000 on Kuntz. Then he beat Kuntz by split decision. And
he barely cheated. He barely didn't throw a fight.
Yeah, it's
like,
the weirdest
story. If he had lost that fight by legitimate split decision, he could have been convicted for throwing a fight when he didn't actually throw it, but he still lost, which is got to be the worst thing that's ever happened to somebody. When you try to win, oh, God, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think you have it backwards, though, because he won. He was trying to lose, but he won.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is that it's screwed up that, yeah, if he had lost the split decision,
Then everybody's happy. Sending him death threats, and he wins a bunch of money. But instead, he won by split decision, so he pissed off everybody. And then he still got in trouble for fixing the fight, even though he didn't fix it.
I wonder if anybody would have known if he had lost.
The whole thing is bizarre.
Or if anybody, I mean, I guess more people, it would have been actually worse then, because...
Well, the issue was all the money that came in on Bang.
Right. So
I mean, on
theory,
Kuntz. It came in on Kuntz because Bang was supposed to take a dive. Bang was paid to take a dive, and they bet $1.7 million on Kuntz. And that drew all these red flags because nobody bets money on Tae-Hun Bang versus Leo Kuntz on a show in Seoul or wherever the hell this show was. That's what drew everybody's attention.
All the bad people in this situation lose, except for Bang, in theory, because he actually got the win. So he kind of has that on his record. But all the guys all lost their money trying to cheat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know if anybody should be punished for this. Like, Bang's kind of a hero. He ended up cheating all the bad guys out of their money on accident, kind of, on purpose, I don't know. And all the bad guys lost their money. Like, they kind of learned a lesson. I just decided nobody should be indicted on this. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because Kuntz said the UFC seemed like they knew something wasn't right. They told me it was the largest odds swing they'd seen in MMA and last minute. They told me, hey, if either one of you guys goes out there and doesn't fight, you should prepare to be investigated.
Well, yeah, they knew. They saw something. They just obviously didn't know who, so they did the right thing, I'm guessing.
Yeah. The whole thing is pretty wild.
This is one of those things that I'm kind of surprised. I don't want to say surprised it's taken this long, but in the international world, way more than we have here, like, match fixing and all that happens a ton. It's just that it tends to be soccer games, but there'll be these weird, like, second division soccer matches in New Guinea or something like that, where it's obvious to everybody in the world that there must be a fix because the game ends, like, 7-0, and there's all this money being bet on it. It's so weird how this happens, and honestly, this is kind of like the second division New Guinea-style match in the UFC. It's Taehyung Bang on a card in Korea that was on Fight Pass that nobody in the world, I guess Koreans maybe cared about it, but God, this man might be true. He could have been like a national hero. This is as bad as Shoeless Joe Jackson. I've now turned my opinion around. He should be indicted.
Speaking of legal issues, I'm not sure if you saw this story, but a mixed martial and MMA fighter was hospitalized over the weekend after competing in an event in Plymouth, Massachusetts. He actually died yesterday morning, and an investigation is underway, officials said. The fighter's name was Rondell Clark. He was 26 and was pronounced dead at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Plymouth DA's office said Clark fought Saturday on a card sponsored by the Cage Titans promotion company at Plymouth Memorial Hall. He lost by TKO in the third and was carried from the ring on a stretcher. After being taken to the hospital in Plymouth, he was later transferred to Boston. They still don't really have a cause of death that hasn't come out yet, whether it was head trauma. I saw something about renal failure, so it might be related to a weight cut. But this is another one where it's a case of this was an amateur fight. It wasn't a pro fight. And you got to wonder about, you know, the medicals and how strict everything is on these smaller independent shows.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it sucks for the dude.
Yes.
His family. I mean, yes. You know, it does suck. I always kind of feel weird talking about stories involving dead people and being like, yeah, let's just ignore this guy. Like they did on ESPN, they're talking about the Ezekiel Elliott suspension. Like, he's been suspended for 6 games for beating his former girlfriend. Now, I know it's not necessarily the most important thing to people, but we do need to talk about his fantasy football impact. I'm like, wow, that was a really, really awkward way to get there.
Did you see the thing with, obviously you saw the Trump press conference, but at the end he started trying to shill his wine?
Did he really?
Oh, my God. I'll see if I can find it.
Oh, that's fucking... I just thought it was really funny and very much under the radar, the fact that the... And it's not really weird so much. It's just kind of like a sign of the times that the President of the United States gave a press conference as he emerged from a hotel with his name on it. Like, that's really weird. Like, he's very happy. You could tell he's happier being in New York than he is being in D.C. He does not like the White House. He basically flat out said, like, oh, good to be home. No, although the White House is very special. Really, America is my home. It's like, dude, just say you like Trump Tower. I'm not going to blame you. I bet it's nicer than the White House.
Yeah, as far as this guy goes, I mean, obviously it'll come out, but it's a sad story. We don't have a lot of information as far as, like, a cause of death or what it was, but it's another one where...
Well, oh, yeah. I was going to say, because I think about this as you went over the story. The first thing that comes to mind is the similar story there at Rufus Sport with one of their fighters.
The kickboxing, right? The amateur show, yeah.
So, yeah. And you'll see this, and the stories are all very similar in that it's usually not somebody that's a total total amateur. It's usually not like a tough man type of thing. It tends to be people who really are training, and, you know, they're the one in a million. But I, and it's, you know, it's very possible, obviously, the better medicals would catch things. But I also think there may just be kind of like a survival of the fittest deal, in that if you've got something wrong with you that's going to cause you to die when you get in a cage fight, like if, you know, you do, or if you are more susceptible to renal failure, or you've got some sort of weird brain aneurysm waiting to pop, or whatever the fuck it is, or blood clot or something, it's probably going to come out before you ever become a big name fighter. Like, John Jones isn't going to suddenly all of a sudden wake up one day and somebody's going to go, turns out you've got this weird thing you were born with, this genetic anomaly, and if you get punched right here, you'll die. Like, no, it would have already died by now. So, in summation, Tom Brady's a dick.
He might be. He very well might be. Plymouth is only like half an hour from where I live. It's like right, it's like dead smack in the middle between here and Boston.
Wait, is that like the, like Plymouth Rock, Plymouth?
Correct.
Like the place where we landed?
I don't know. I don't think the we've Mayflower? Ever landed everywhere anywhere together, but yes, the Mayflower landed there, Plymouth Rock.
Huh.
Yeah, Memorial Hall. They have MMA shows there every probably, like quarterly, I would say, every 3 months or so.
They should put them on Fight Pass, really. I mean, then I'd have something to watch.
I'm trying to find this thing with Trump. You're not even going to be able to hear it anyway.
I mean, I keep...
Forget, you're not going to be able to hear it. But essentially, they're talking about Charlottesville, obviously. He goes, I know Charlottesville really well. I own one of the largest wineries in the entire state. It's in Charlottesville.
Oh, like, okay.
Oh, my God.
Like, okay, he wasn't really shilling. He's just trumping it up where he's got to make sure everybody knows that he's involved in everything.
Or trying to plug his wine at, like, the most inopportune time ever, but whatever.
I think that's just who he – I don't think it's – Look, for regular people, that'd be plugging for Trump. I really don't think he intentionally does anything disrespectful. He's just, you mention anything in the world, and some of it's just who he is, but he's going to be like, oh yeah, I got a winery there. Like, and we all kind of have that on a little level. Like, imagine, like, if there was, like, imagine if, like, there was, the news came out tomorrow, and there was a big school shooting in Lombard, Illinois. I didn't do it, of course. But imagine you saw it on the news. If somebody's talking about it, you'd be like, oh, yeah, you know what? I know a guy that lives there. And right. Trump is kind of the same where he's like, oh, yeah, I got a winery there. It sounds weird. It's just, it's Trump. He's got his name on shit everywhere. Mm. And so I guess when a fucking white supremacist drives over somebody with his car, Trump's going to be like, oh, I know that place. It's right down the street from my first hotel or something like that. You'd be like, what?
Right, it's all about him. You know what I mean? And what he's
doing. Yeah, it's just like, you know, yeah. His frame of reference is like, oh, yeah, I know. No. When somebody, like, you hear about this happening there, on some level, he's, you know, he's just kind of like, don't tell me about this. I know that area. I know what's going on there. I've got a winery there. I didn't know that Virginia was a great. I don't ever hear about Virginia wines, which maybe that's why he's got a winery there.
It's a thing, but it's small, and they're not. You know, well-reviewed or really respected within the wine industry. But in theory, you should be able to make decent wine there. Also, the land was probably cheap. Like, Trump probably doesn't want to spend money to buy land in Napa, where it's going to cost, you know, 100 times what it costs to buy land in Virginia. But anyway. That's
I don't hear of almost any wines that ever come out of the East Coast. I know, you know, Napa's big. Washington State's got a lot. Arizona and New Mexico are developing a lot in that region. The Midwest has not really anything. But I never hear anything coming from the East Coast or the South. I mean, I'm wondering if just there's something about the – I can see that the temperature not being right. Maybe it's just too hot. I don't know, too wet and too hot? Too much humidity?
some of it's perception too. Because I mean, on the East, like Cape Cod, there's a winery on Cape that grows grapes. I mean, it's crappy wine. A lot of it depends on temperature.
But crappy. You just proved the point.
Right, but I'm just saying, a lot of it depends on temperature, soil, you know, humidity, that sort of thing. Like grapes, like the fact that they grow wine in like New Mexico is kind of crazy. Like they make wine in Mexico too, but it's like, it's hard to grow grapes in that hot weather. Certain crops, grapes, whatever, grow better in different places. That's just how it is. I mean, any kind of booze works that way too. I mean, tequila is made from cactus, and whiskey is made from rye, and rum is made from sugar cane, and
vodka is made from potatoes.
It can be.
Wait, is there something else it's made out of?
Yeah, wheat's actually more common than potato. But basically, wherever you live, you make your booze out of whatever.
Humanity is good at crafting alcohol.
Whatever's easiest to grow there, that's what you make your booze with. Like in the islands, they make rum, and it's made from sugarcane because it just grows easy there.
Like in prison, you use a loaf of bread.
For whatever, yes.
But, yeah, no, you take the bread, you put it in the bag with some other stuff, and you get it. The bread will ferment, and you're supposed to like strain it through a sock and all kinds of stuff.
I'd rather just not be drunk, I guess. That bad.
No, I think if I was in prison and somebody gave me the option of being drunk all the time, I'd be like, yeah, I'm gonna take that over sitting here in my normal state of mind with all these serial killers.
But as far as wine goes, like, certain grapes grow better in places, too. It's for whatever reason, in Napa, you know, Cab and Merlot grow well. But a lot of it's based on, like, how close to the equator you are. Like, if you're too close to it, it's too hot. You can't grow anything. You can't grow grapes. If you're too far away from it, you know, like the poles or Canada or Russia, it's too cold. So there's, like, a limited area, like, Tropica Cancer, Tropica Capricorn, that sort of thing, where it's ideal temperatures to make wine. Obviously, if, you know, the temperature in the world changes, and it's going to affect things. But, the East Coast...
Go
ahead.
I'm not really sorry.
But you would think, like, China. China should be able to grow grapes. It's on the same longitude as the States and France and stuff, but they don't either.
Well, they have a lot of mountains there.
They do, but along the coast, you would think.
China's just a shithole.
It is, but they grow rice, no problem. I'm just saying, you would think logically in that way.
Yeah, no, that's true. Maybe they have grapes there.
But they could. I mean,
well, they could now, but maybe they didn't have it before. And I was just thinking that what we call wine, again, it's all alcohol. It's all alcohol by another name. So what we call wine tastes a certain way because it was created, I'll say, along the Mediterranean Sea, whether it's on the north or south, whether it's, you know, Africa and in Egypt and, you know, Israel and that area, or, you know, Persia, you go up to France and Italy. It's a very similar climate, so that's what we think. This is what wine should taste like. And so when we try to, like, use the same thing, the grape in other areas, and it doesn't taste the same, well, really what they should be doing, is what you were kind of saying earlier, which is, no, just make the alcohol with whatever grows in that area. Mm. You know, you don't make vodka out of grapes. You don't make vodka, and you don't make it in France. Maybe you could. I don't know. I guess I don't know if they can grow wheat. I don't know if they can grow wheat in France. I don't know.
They make good bread. They probably have some.
Where the fuck do they grow wheat in France? I think there's all vineyards everywhere. Just museums and vineyards. I've been to France too, which is really pathetic.
Yeah, France is weird about wine, man. It's like they are so strict on the rules, and it's like so old school. It's like certain wines you can only grow, like you would hate it. Certain, like, you got to follow all these rules.
Oh, I could get into that.
But you can't call yourself, well, there's a reason
for it. You can't
call
yourself Champagne if you're not in the Champagne region.
Right, and you got to, but even within Champagne, So you call yourself Champagne, you put that on the label. You've got to be Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, or Pinot Meunier. You've got to be one of those three grapes, or you can't call yourself Champagne. Like, they're that strict. You could grow some other grape. You could grow Pinot Grigio in Champagne, turn it into sparkling wine, but legally you could not put Champagne on that label.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of, like, irrigation you're allowed to have. There's a certain amount of yield per hectare you can have. There's all these laws, and it's so stringent, but the idea is they want the quality of Champagne to be at a certain level, and when someone goes to the store and they see Champagne on a label, they know what they're going to get. In the States, the New World, whether it's Australia, Argentina, South Africa, New World, they have no rules. Like, you can put whatever you want on the label. Like, I could grow Cabernet on Cape and call it Cabernet, and you'd have a designation based on where you made it, but there's no rule that says you can or cannot grow this certain grape here. It's just, like, wine is so fascinating if you get into it ever, but we're way off topic.
Yeah, I could get back to men hitting each other or whatever the fuck's
next. I wonder what kind of wine Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson like. They're targeted to fight at UFC 216 with the interim lightweight title on the line. You heard me right. I said interim lightweight title. Conor McGregor's the current lightweight champion, but he's in a little boxing match right now with Floyd Mayweather, so he's tied up at least for the next 10 days with that. So this booking is very interesting for a couple of reasons. One, Lee wasn't really on anybody's radar for an interim title fight. If you remember back to, I don't even know when it was, a few months ago, Ferguson was scheduled to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov, but Khabib missed weight like the day of the fight and couldn't fight, and Ferguson got pulled. So Ferguson still should be in line for an interim title fight or a fight with Conor, but they threw Kevin Lee in apparently because Khabib isn't ready to fight. Dana White said he's injured. Does this fight make any sense as far as making it for an interim title and the fact that Kevin Lee is in it?
I feel like this is one of those fights that if we had like a could have like a real world view of the UFC, a la the like it was the West Wing or Ballers or something like that, this fight would make a lot of sense. But since we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, it's tougher to make sense out of it. I want to feel like this is really the result of Dana White throwing his weight around and being like, "Look, Khabib, we ain't putting up your shit. You're done." It's probably sadly just this new. It's just a weird-ass fascination with these interim titles. Like, it kind of started out as one of these things where, like, oh, that's kind of funny. And then I kind of play it up as a bit. Like, oh, this is so stupid. But this is really stupid. Like, this is fucking insane. Conor just won the belt in November. There is a very, very good chance he defends the belt in November or December. Probably December. That's very possible. That's not a reason to have an interim title. And especially given that these assholes already tried an interim title with this for this same belt. And then, so what they've already told us is, this is Manus Khabib, this is Tony Ferguson. They are number one and number two behind Conor McGregor. We are telling you, we are creating an interim championship, and instead of just admitting it's a money grab, here's our reason. Our reason is, these guys are so great, and these are unique circumstances. They deserve a title fight. They shouldn't have to wait around. And you go, fine, I can lie to myself on that one. But then when you pull Khabib out of it and you put in Kevin Lee, and I like Kevin Lee. I think he's come on strong. But dude, Jack, his biggest win was a phantom win, maybe over Michael Chiesa. Like, this is just really weird. Like, that's. Yeah. And I don't even really have a problem with him. I think him and Tony Ferguson is an awesome fight. I really like the fight. I can't wait to see it. I think it'll be really great. It ain't no fucking pay-per-view main event. Are you kidding me?
It is right now.
Like, it's one thing to have to, like, the UFC has a tough enough time convincing people to watch fighters that they already know who they are, like Mighty Mouse. If you then add in like Kevin Lee, where they have to first tell people who the guy is and then why you should watch him for a title that you just saw Conor McGregor walking around with, it's so stupid. It's insane. Plus, again, if Conor, I wrote this, but if Conor were to hypothetically beat Floyd Mayweather, he'd probably have some like weird ass boxing titles. So there could be like some title fight where Conor's on one side with his UFC featherweight championship he never lost, his UFC lightweight championship he never lost, a bunch of boxing titles, and on the other side will be somebody with an interim championship for a belt that he just won a year ago. This is the UFC. We went from MMA was so great because for the longest time there was like five divisions. And you knew who everybody was. You knew all the champions. You knew a lot of contenders. You really, really knew what was going on. And now, all of a sudden, we got like 15 belts decided in one fight. This is really stupid.
Yeah, but don't you think part of the issue, too, is they've got to have all these shows and promote, you know, it's not one show a week, but almost 40 shows a year between pay-per-view and FS1 and Big Fox. I think they feel the need that they've got to have people to main event these shows. And main events nowadays, for whatever reason, in their mind, have to have a title.
No, I don't feel sorry for them because they need to basically put on, what, 15, 16, quote, big shows a year. They've got legitimately almost that many champions right now. And that's just one a year for those guys. Their problem is you can look at this and go, huh, this is a really good fight. That's going to main event that card in October. Well, you know, there's no other fights they can make for October. They just don't have enough main events. Tune in next month to Madison Square Garden when they'll probably have Cody versus TJ, a Joanna title fight, and George St. Pierre and Michael Bisping all on one card. No, their problem is that they overload these big cards, which I don't blame them. It does make them a little bit more appealing. But you could easily take the Joanna fight, put it on this show, and you go, at least I always think there's a lot of value in, I used to call it like the Matt Hughes effect. Like Matt Hughes would appear in pay-per-views kind of near the end of his career. It wasn't that you were going to ever pay money to see Matt Hughes fight, but when you're looking at a show and you're kind of like, yeah, I guess I'll see it. And then you go, oh, Matt Hughes is fighting? And you go, huh. You feel like you're getting a little more value for what you're spending. And I think it also makes you a little bit more of a solid consumer. I think we tend to think of people, this person buys it, this person doesn't buy it. But there's a middle ground there. There's the guy that would have bought it if he felt a little more excited about it. And so I think that Matt Hughes, those type of guys, and you could say that with, Yuan or whatever I was going with my dumbass point. But, yeah, it's a stupid fight. Or stupid title fight.
I agree. Right now Lee is ranked 7th in the lightweight division. It goes Khabib, Ferguson, Eddie Alvarez, Edson Barboza, Justin Gaethje, Nate Diaz, and then Kevin Lee.
Actually, I guess they are in a little bit of a corner there. Because
they are, because a lot of those guys are tied up. Alvarez and Gaethje are already booked. And I guess they're talking about doing Barboza and Khabib. And then Nate's obviously on the shelf. And then the guy right behind Lee is Dustin Poirier, and he's being targeted for a fight with Pettis. So they don't have a lot of other people to do it. But at the same time, pull Gaethje. You know what I mean? Pull Gaethje from tough.
Pull Nate. How could Nate not want a title fight in the main event of a pay-per-view?
That's a good question.
And what he would do is win Conor McGregor's belt. This makes more sense. I just talked myself into saying that's what they should have done.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. And it would have been a better fight.
Yeah.
On top of it. I'd rather see Nate Diaz versus Tony Ferguson's fucking awesome.
That's Nate being full Nate. And that's a great fight. Damn it. And I like you, Kevin Lee, but you ain't Nate Diaz. Oh, that really does kind of show how much of Nate has grown as a legitimate star. Because I guarantee you, I remember December 2015, he fought Michael Johnson on that card when Cerrone lost to Dos Anjos. And it wasn't like we're sitting there going, you know what would make a pay-per-view great? Nate Diaz fighting. And now it's like, yeah, I would totally spend money to watch him fuck somebody up or talk trash. And he's only had, what, two fights since that time? That's incredible. Nate's a hero.
He played his hand very, very well. Also on UFC 216, I believe this is official, in a really weird fight in my estimation, Paige VanZant versus Jessica Eye at flyweight. VanZant would be moving up in weight 10 pounds, and I would be moving down. Eye is 1-5 in the UFC.
Jessica Eye still has a fucking job. Honestly. Seriously.
I know, this is like a passion of mine, but yes, neither do I.
He's got one win.
And the one fight it
was a bullshit.
She only won that one fight because her ear exploded. Leslie Smith's ear blew up and the ref stopped the fight. Like, it was a fluke win. She should be 0-6.
She's better than the 0-6 record. She ain't that much better than it. And I guess Paige, I don't know.
Just kind of lost a batch.
It's a new weight class and they want to, get it going. Maybe Paige thinks I'm better.
I think you're so much bigger than that's Paige. What I feel like it's just like a size mismatch.
That's what I think too, but maybe Paige wants to be at that weight. She doesn't like the other. It's a Paige fan.
Can they just find some other fighter to move up from 115 to fight her at 125 as opposed to I moving down? I bet I misses weight anyway and it won't even matter.
Great. She can blame her period.
Is that sexist?
No, because somebody did it, so it's fine. I've never used that ever as a joke. I don't think I have. Because it seemed kind of odd, or some part of me was like, is that really right? I'm not really sure on female anatomy, so I don't want to make the joke and be like, it completely wrong. So, but now that I know it is true.
Now that one woman in Mexico claimed it as an excuse, it's totally valid.
One Mexican's all it takes for me. I'm not Donald Trump, all right?
So you mentioned UFC 217 in November at MSG. Several fights are rumored. None of them have actually been confirmed by the UFC, which is kind of interesting. But the main event appears to be Bisping versus GSP for the middleweight title, which is a farce.
Is it?
But the UFC,
I mean, is that,
yes,
is,
that, that, that fight should not be happening.
Mayweather McGregor's a farce. I can see George St. Pierre winning that fight. Like, I don't think he's going to, but
let's back up. I think GSP could win the fight. I don't think he's necessarily deserving of a middleweight title shot after 3 years off.
I'm past that.
A bit of a farce. Especially when there's already an interim middleweight champion.
That's true, but that's
waiting for the next fight.
Fucking retarded. I mean, my gosh, does that look even dumber in hindsight. But I will say that at least they're giving us a title fight involving the actual champion of the division and a really big name. Although, yeah, they did somehow manage to lessen the impact of that, all for 100,000 buys with Betch Kohea, who didn't even fight. Oh, God, they didn't even have a main event. What the fuck?
But, Bisping's like the worst middleweight champion they've ever had.
Yes.
I mean, he won the title on a fluke over Rockhold, then barely beat 46-year-old Dan Henderson and got dropped multiple times in that fight and almost lost. And now he's fighting a guy who, he's kind of a small welterweight moving up.
I just thought of how bad Bisping is as a champion. And it's not totally his fault because it's kind of an odd division. But in the history of the UFC, I don't know if I would favor him over any middleweight champion except for maybe Evan Tanner. I don't know if I would favor him over Rich Franklin, Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman, any of these guys. Like, I think I would have probably, I could have seen them, these two, let's face it, when Bisping was fighting back then, and Franklin was champion, nobody saw Bisping at his level. So, yeah, I don't think I'd favor him over anybody except for the dead guy.
Yeah. And anyway, so GSP posted a picture of him. He doesn't suck. He's really, really good, but there's four or five guys who are
also
much
just, they've had a lot of really good champions.
They have. So GSP posted a picture of him signing his bout agreement for the fight, and he put it up on his Instagram or Twitter or whatever. But UFC still has not officially confirmed the fight. We don't know if Bisping signed his bout agreement or what's going on. And it's been about a week now, which is pretty weird, and you wonder if GSP just, like, went out on his own and did that, and now UFC's pissed at him or something. It's just a weird way to announce a championship fight on their biggest
part of the year. Again, I recorded, like, a show last week, and that is, like, four shows in between, but I only put out one of them because I thought the other ones were weird. I didn't really know what was going on. I recorded most of them as I was drunk and walking around at 11 p.m. with my dog throughout the streets. But,
That doesn't sound weird at all. Totally normal.
Racist. I'm not really sure. I don't think it was supposed to be, but I'm like, okay. I don't think it's right. Anyways, I think some of this is basically, we hear official. I think when you look at how the UFC has historically handled something is official only at the same time when they start having tickets go on sale. You know, they send out the email blast, this is official. Like, you never hear them say, this is officially signed, without you having the ability basically to buy the tickets for the show. And since they're not really there yet, plus official also requires you know, the Athletic Commission to have signed off on it and said, yes, we confirm this, this is appropriate. And there just may be some deal where an Athletic Commission won't sign off on a fight in November when it's August. It seems a little early to say, yeah, everything's good with this fight when you don't really know. So it could just be a very tactical thing. And also, if you're the UFC, you've got you're promoting Floyd and Connor. You got a pay-per-view in September, a pay-per-view in October, a bunch of shows in between. You don't want to let this get lost in the ruin, or you don't want it to overshadow everything. So you got to kind of drop this at the right time.
It's almost like the Nevada Athletic Commission on how to market things.
You stepped on my joke.
I was thinking, how awesome would it be if, like, GSP, like, the New York Athletic Commission said he couldn't fight in New York because of something with his eye or something. That would be the best, if New York, like, shut down the main event of this show.
I feel like New York is so awesome because, on the one hand, I think they're really incompetent, but I also think that it won't negatively affect the sport because all the people like the UFC, they run their own shows for the most part. You know, they have the same referees, the same judges. They have everything. Like, they know how to run a show. The UFC's not going to put on a show. Like, if they're in an unregulated area, and not if the UFC suddenly says, all right, you know, no fucking judges, we don't need any doctors or anything. They do a more professional show than, you know, anybody. And so when they're in Nevada, they're just going to – or, I'm sorry, New York, they're going to do their show. And if New York doesn't like it, it says, oh, you can't do that. They just, quote, pay the fine, and here's your $2,000, and you go away. Like, it's a state that is really incompetent but very easy to bribe. But you just bribe them to get things done the way it should be because they're so stupid. Like, you're not bribing them to get – brass knuckles allowed, you're bribing them to allow them, you know, have mouth guards or something they should have, but they're so stupid they don't know what's going on.
I was just thinking about, like, the Rashad Evans thing where they were holding him out because of something with a brain scan and he couldn't fight on that UFC 205 card, and then he ends up fighting multiple times after.
He paid the $2,000 or something
in
like
different
that.
States. No, I think you're thinking of Kevin.
Oh, maybe
Kelvin
that, that's the one. Yeah. That first.
Yeah, like he missed weight or something. He was they suspend you if you miss weight
like
or something.
Suspension or here's your $2,000.
Yeah.
Like, what? You're not a real commission. You're just taking bribes, and you're taking cheap bribes to do what everyone else does. It's great. I like New York now.
Yeah, they're also the state that let Daniel Cormier weigh in on the towel, push down on the towel, and also the state that was not going to let Pearl Gonzalez fight because she had breast implants, even though Misha Tate had done the same thing. And then they decided it was okay to have breast implants and fight. So that's New York. They've only had a handful of shows, and all this awesome stuff has already happened.
It's a good thing that he's only running the biggest shows they've ever had in that state all the time.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. Then also rumored for UFC 217, I think Cody Garbrandt said the fight was a done deal. It was Garbrandt versus Dillashaw for the bantamweight title. That fight was supposed to happen a couple months ago, but Garbrandt had to pull out because of back issues. I wonder if Dana's weird German doctor was able to fix Garbrandt's back.
Well, I know that when there's something wrong with me behind, so to speak, I always rely on the Germans to get it sorted out. That's just that; those are the people you want involved in that. So yeah, I'm glad they're gonna fight. The steam's been taken off the fight, I think, because they had like an organic hatred. And then they did Ultimate Fighter, which maybe that helped, but nobody watched it. And now I'm like, oh yeah, you guys. Oh yeah, I remember you won the title a long time ago, and you beat that one guy somehow, right? I'm gonna watch George St. Pierre later. Just hurry up and get your 25 minutes of butterfly punches over.
Garbrandt.
I know, but you know the odds are it's gonna be 25 minutes of. If you want to be a cynic, you could be like, they're just touching each other, like Germans do.
That's a weird cynic. Also rumored is Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Rose Namajunas for the strawweight title, and possibly Chris Cyborg versus Holly Holm for the featherweight championship.
There's no way they're doing a quadruple.
That's what I saw.
They are. I mean, that's really pushing it, man. I mean, come on. You could have two shows in a row with double main events, and they'd both be really good. I mean, God. Honestly, I actually think the Cyborg and Holly makes a lot of sense on this show, more than Joanna's fight does, because this is going to be kind of a mainstream type of show, New York, crossover, George St. Pierre, and I think Cyborg is somebody that could very easily get over with the mainstream audience, and Holly Holm has her reputation from Ronda still, with like, you know, the Regis and Kelly people, or whatever, Kelly and the... Kelly and Ryan Seacrest. So I just watched the show for the first time in my life the other day, and I'm like, huh.
Such a liar.
No, I watched it. There was some, but it wasn't Kelly. It was some British chick who's like a singer. She's like 27. I'm like, huh. So I looked up on Google, and she comes up naked a lot, like deliberately, like artsy photos in France. I'm like, huh, that's what they do. That's what they do over there. So anyways, if they could put, you know, one boob on each show, and then you'd have a tit on each show, and instead we're just going to get one great pair of tits and a 12-year-old.
I'm totally lost. Couple other fights coming up. Kelvin Gastelum versus Anderson Silva is finally going to happen, as long as Anderson Silva doesn't take any sex drugs and Kelvin Gastelum doesn't too much or smoke too much weed. Scheduled for November 25th in Shanghai. This will be the first show in mainland China for the UFC.
Fucking and doing drugs. That's like the entirety of human existence.
Yeah, you got to keep it in check, though. Everything in small quantities,
that's
right?
Dick pill. You don't want that in small quantity.
Oh, a little goes a long way, I hear.
Okay. Homo.
Do you like that fight? Two losers. Anderson's coming off a win, right? He beat Brunson.
Did he lose to Cormier? Oh, no, Brunson.
No, the Brunson fight was after.
February. Yeah, that was a piece of shit.
But
this is the fight in Shanghai. It's fine. It's.
But what Anderson Silva said he was going to retire if he didn't get an interim title fight against Goal.
Or you know what?
He says he hates Dana White and he's sick of his shit.
You don't know this isn't going to be for an interim title. There's a very good chance that this is going to be for the first ever Chinese championship.
In what weight class?
Though? China weight. You know,
this could be anywhere from 170 to 205.
Yes,
who knows?
You know, whatever government says you weigh, you weigh. That's how it works in China.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
what are they use? Metric system over there?
Use whatever the government says it weighs. It weighs government pounds. I don't know. They probably use metric. Yeah, I feel like those are countries where things like kilometers and I was going to say measuring doesn't really, they don't exist because, like, they're so poor and oppressed, but they do have some buildings, so they probably do have engineers and stuff. I imagine they probably use the metric system, yeah. It's going to be a cool fight, though. Like, if I could, honestly, if I had, like, unlimited funds to go anywhere for, like, to any fight in the next 6 months, I'd be, I mean, yes, obviously Conor Floyd's right there, but I'd be really interested in seeing Anderson Silva fight in Shanghai. It's such a neat idea. Like, it's just, I mean, I've never been to Songhai, and, but I've always wanted to go. It's such a cool looking place. It's Anderson Silva, so there's always going to be a little mystique. You're in China. It's all bright lights. It's like this Asian commie Vegas without gambling type of place. But there's still, like, if you have enough money, you can bet on people dying or something like that. Like, they've got weird underground shit there in Shanghai. So, and there's probably boats in their harbor a lot. Like, but old boats. Well, modern boats on the bottom, but they have, like, fan-looking sails. The geisha girl fan. In Japan, same thing. And so that's what you see as you walk down the river, or the bay, or whatever they have. The bay. And you're taking it all in. It's kind of smoggy. I mean, it's Shanghai. It's a very smoggy city. Let's not kid ourselves here. But it's alive, and you don't live there, so you're okay with it kind of being decrepit, because that's not really causing global warming. That's just, like, bad health and pollution. And so you're like, this kind of reminds me of the gritty New York City days. Like, this is a city in the up and coming. People, they're living and dying to make this place better. And then they're going to get Anderson Silva, the legend of all legends, and a guy who is the closest modern the world has had to Bruce Lee, the son of Hong Kong. He hated China, but, you know, still Chinese in many respects. And he wears the Bruce Lee suit, and he's going to show up and do his thing. And, you know, it's going to be really good to watch a really old Anderson Silva fight in front of commies.
Wow. I'd rather just go to UFC 217 in New York if it were me, but whatever. Do you know the population of Shanghai is 24 million?
Sounds about right.
It's three times the size. That's a lot of freaking people. That's three times the size of New York.
23 million? Is that?
Yeah, New York's like
Chicago's
8 million, right?
8 million. New York's 20 million.
Yeah, are you counting, like,
New York, the places that if you were like, hey, I'm here, like, oh, that's New York, that's what they're counting. Like, I'm counted as part of Chicago, and everybody be like, yeah, I'm from Chicago.
It says, no, it's 8 million.
No, it's like 20 in the metro area there or whatever.
Like, in the whole state,
it's not 20 in the whole
maybe.
State. It's one of the biggest states in the union. They got 20-some electoral college votes. Maybe 30.
Okay.
I know New York.
It's an estimated,
like the TV area for New York, which is a pretty good way to judge it.
Yeah, I mean, there's different ways of defining what the metropolitan area is, but I don't know. I've always seen New York around like 7 or 8 million. And that's what Wikipedia is telling me. I don't know what it's defining as actually New York City. I don't know if that's just like Manhattan or what that refers to.
I think
but
that's just Manhattan.
I'm assuming it doesn't include like Brooklyn,
yeah.
And you're including Brooklyn and the Bronx.
Well,
and
I would.
All
I mean,
that, right?
That's New York. Like if I'm going to Brooklyn, like somewhere where are you going? I'm going to New York. I can maybe say then they'd be like, oh yeah, where? You go, oh Brooklyn. It's a subset of New York. Point B. Anyways, what does that have to do with Shanghai?
I'm saying I'd rather go to New York than Shanghai.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch a UFC 217, Bisping, GSP, Cyborg, Holm, Garbrandt, Dillashaw, all those fights, as opposed to flying all the way to Commie Shanghai to watch 41-year-old Dick Pill Anderson Silva versus the fat pothead.
I'm more thinking like the non-fight stuff in Shanghai would just be awesome. I love Asian shit.
Is it, though?
I don't know.
Do you know that?
Hong Kong's one of my favorite places. And that,
you seem not to be the type of person who likes foreign
Hong Kong's,
land.
If I could move anywhere in the world, it'd be Hong Kong or Paris. I love foreign lands. I'm a big foreign person. I love that shit. I believe. Okay. I just think, you know, you go to foreign land, you act like a foreigner. I'm just saying, when they come here to America, speak English, motherfuckers.
Do you speak Mandarin when you go to China?
I tried to learn as much Cantonese as I could when I went to Hong Kong, and I tried to do it when I could. Like, I always try to learn a little. Like, again, I was just visiting. If I was going to live there, oh, yeah. It's kind of weird. Like, it was a great joke on the Joe Rogan show. Gavin McInnes, no neo-Nazi, apparently. And he's really not. And he's talking about, like, this Armenian cab driver. He's like, I asked the guy, like, how long have you been here? He's like, 20 years. He's like, 20 years? He's got a fucking accent still. He barely speaks English. If I went to Armenia and lived there for 20 years, I'd be a fucking poet. And Scott, what I would fear, like, if I went to another country, I'd learn, you'd learn the language. It's not like, it just feels like.
Do you think it's easier said than done, though?
No, I think it's not easy to do, but I never understood the idea that you would go to a country and try to retain a lot of what you had. Like, if I go to France, I want to be French. It's going to be like, all right, you're going to embrace. Like, right. I always thought, like, if I lived in France, how would I vote? I'd be like, I would vote with whatever has the most popular poll at the time, because I'd be like, that's what French is. And, like, I want to be French. I want to have wonderful.
Do you eat baguettes and wear, like, a beret?
Oh, my gosh, I eat so much fucking bread in France. It's wonderful. You just literally just sit there and eat. I would just get a loaf of bread and a thing of wine, and it's magnificent. That's what it is to be French. And that's what you want to be. It's like, I wouldn't go, you know, if I'm going to move to Saudi Arabia, I'm not going to move there unless I absolutely, like, for work or some shit like that. But it's like, if I'm going to go to Saudi Arabia, guess what? I'm going to wear white robes and weird red fucking checkerboard hats on my head. And oddly enough, a lot of sunglasses, because that's what it means to be Saudi Arabian. I don't get it. Like, learn the culture you're going to. I don't mean that as, like, a total racist thing. It's like, why do you want to come to America if you don't want to be American? That's just fucking weird. Don't you want to eat hot dogs? And, like, I love that. I saw this other day. I saw this Russian dude here. He's speaking with the accent and all. But he had a Chicago Bears, like, hat on. It was just, like, a regular old hat. I'm like, good for you, man. Like, you're here and, like, you're trying. Even if he doesn't really get it, like, some part of me is like, that guy's like, I want to be American. I'm like, yeah. If I went to, you know, Moscow, I'd be like, I'm going to support the local hockey team and the Red Devils or whatever they'd be over there.
Good, but isn't part of coming to the United States, part of the idea is you can come as you are and bring your own culture, and that's part of the freedom and one of the reasons people want to come here?
I can understand. From our perspective, yeah. Except for from their perspective, I don't understand. Why are you leaving your culture unless you want to get away from your culture? Why do you come to another country and want to keep doing what you're doing before? You can just be where you were and do that. You don't have to leave a country.
Right. But obviously it's not as black and white as that. You can bring some of your culture and still avoid the civil war your country's
that's
in.
That's why your country sucks, because of your culture. It bred all that.
Right, but
it's the reason that stuff happens.
You can still dress how you want. You can still wear your weird whatever outfit that's unusual
but, like,
to
people
us.
Think of, like, honestly, to me, the real big thing is, I really do think that there's something when it comes to language above all else. Nobody cares about Mexican clothes or food. It's all language. And there is something, I think, very important about language is it unifies you, and it does give you a sense of camaraderie with the people. Like, what I say, when I went to, like, if I go to Hong Kong or France, like, the first thing, what do you say? Would you learn the language? Not would you dress like that, it's would you learn the language? That's the thing that allows you to connect, because language does operate in such a different sphere with the brain. So I think what I'm really saying is I don't want to learn any more Spanish than I already have accidentally from reading the Piso Mojado sign in restaurants.
I think, though, it's difficult to learn a foreign language when you're older and you immigrate to a new country when you're 30 years old. I don't think you can pick it up that easily. You might want a new start in life. You might go to another country and work two full-time jobs to make ends meet and help your family out back home. But at the same time, you might not have the hours in the day or the ability to pick up an entirely new language. They say, like, by the time you're 12, 13, 14, you've already kind of missed the boat on a lot of that shit.
I'm not saying it's
going
to necessarily be easy, but I do think, again, you don't have to right now. It all comes down to if you're Hispanic, or I should really say if you speak Spanish, because everybody I know that's Brazilian, all of them speak English, because they had to. If you're Spanish, you don't have to speak English, because there's so many people now that will accommodate you. And I guess, you know, that's a reality of the world. I'm not going to really try to change it. But it's...
It seems like a big job.
But it just is what it is. But, you know, again, I do think it's kind of like, you know, why did you... I understand, yeah, your country is war-torn or whatever, but it's not America. There's other Spanish-speaking countries that you could go to. No, they wouldn't be as great as America.
Sure.
But you came here for something. And it's like...
Right.
The thing that makes us special, it's almost like it's not language. No, we're not special because of English. But when you can't speak to a man, it's tough to know if you can't connect with him. If somebody doesn't speak English, there's no way I can really communicate to them my view of the country, what I think about these things. It's just, it can't happen. And so I'm forever cut off from someone. And...
I mean, I agree with that. I just don't think it's as easy as saying, learn our language, bitch. You know what I'm saying? It's not that simple, and some people might not be capable of picking up a second language. I mean, do you know what I'm saying?
It's like, I'm not going to try to, I don't really care as far as like a government policy. I think some of it's really, I think it's just bad though, because I do think it also isolates immigrants. And it keeps them removed from a lot of the really, really good things that we have that they don't. But they don't know that we have them. Like, especially if they're like women, you know, in abusive relationships. America is so much more advanced than Mexico on a lot of, you know, criminal justice. And I think there's so many people, because they don't speak English, they don't know. And it's like, that really sucks. So what I'm really saying is that I support women. This is all about women's rights, really.
I'm with you. But don't you think that's always been the case in American history, where immigrants came and the first generation couldn't speak English? You hear so many stories of, like, oh, my grandparents couldn't speak English, and they struggled and got by, and then grew up here, we learned English, and we were the first generation that went to college, yada, yada, yada. There's so many stories like that, and I think it's just a continuation of people assimilating into this country.
I think it probably will be also. I did see... I can't remember who it was I saw speaking about it, but he was Latino, and he said something along the lines of, when Latinos come to this country, the problem as far as English is, it's not that the grandkids and the kids of these people all speak English. The reason why it's not taking like it would for other immigrant groups is that the Irish kind of came, well, the Irish aren't a good example. We'll say
Polish.
The Polish came over. But they kind of came over in one wave, and that was it. Whereas Mexico's had multiple generations of immigration into the United States, which hasn't really ever happened before. We tend to bring in, here's all the Irish, they plop down. Now we don't have lots of Irish immigrants. And same with every other ethnic group, except for Mexicans right now, which is, it started, you know, in the 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s kind of, and it's really ramped up, especially since the 60s. We're looking at 50, 60 years now of one group being the dominant immigrant group. And it's, you know what though, that may be fair, because they're abnormal in that they're atypical compared to other immigrant groups, because we share a border with them. And we've never really had to figure out borders before, because we're America and we got oceans. And we got to figure out something with as far as how immigration comes from the South, because it's a unique problem. Every other immigrant, except for Canadians, who don't really count, every other immigrant has to go over a real long distance. So you can't just be like, hey, you know what? I'm in Bangladesh. Life sucks. But I know if I just walk for a couple weeks, I'll be in America. Like, no, you got to go through a lot of shit to get here. Whereas if you're in Mexico, you're really, like, compared to the amount of preparation you would have to do if you're, like, in China or something like that. If you're in Mexico, it's just like, I'm going to save up some money and get on a truck. Like, that's it's not quite as strenuous as if you're from Shanghai and all of its 24 million people.
Way more than New York. Do you know what the second most, the country with the second most people coming into the United States is now? Per year?
It's going to be like Guatemala or Ecuador or something like that.
Oh, it's actually China. Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
Coming.
Interestingly enough. It might be legal immigrants.
From a country? Because, like, do they count, like, if somebody goes through Ecuador and then through Mexico, is that from Mexico? You know what I'm saying?
This is defined as the top 10 sending countries.
I can see the China. Oh, they sent a lot of people over here for learning.
They have just a lot of people
that's
in general.
That's true, and there's more boys and girls, and that's not good. That's a lot of dudes moving around to keep them in line. Men shouldn't be free to be left to our own devices once we get to a certain age. No good comes of that.
There's a couple more fights announced, too. Anthony Pettis versus Dustin Poirier at UFC Fight Night 112, maybe, in November in Norfolk, Virginia.
I wonder if they'll let Poirier shave his head for that fight. Because
it's in Virginia. Or can Pettis shave his head? Is that cool? Okay. We've also got Mark Hunt versus Marcin Tybura at UFC Fight Night Sydney on November 19th. That'll be the main event of that show.
Mark Hunt just keeps having one fight after another despite suing the company.
This is a weird time in the UFC if you really think about it. Like, weirdest era ever. Just between, you know, all the USADA stuff, all this commission stuff, Conor boxing,
new owners.
Brock maybe coming back, the John Jones stuff, new owners.
But they're more in the mainstream than ever. Like, I don't know if it's because of WMEI, but they really do seem to occupy a different sphere than they did before. When they were with Zuffa, like they feel, and it's kind of serendipitous. It's probably mostly down to Conor, but they feel like they're really part. Like the Conor thing really feels like the UFC is part of the true mainstream now, in a way that they weren't before.
I mean they seem to be growing, and the Mayweather fight only helps. I mean, they're saying it's going to be the biggest pay per view ever.
A big star.
I think Nate does 750,000 buys now.
Yeah,
I really do. I
thought about
that
before, but when I put it in perspective with, because you know, Kevin Lee and Michael Chiesa and Tony Ferguson, like, oh yeah, he's a way bigger star. He's really marketable. I want to see that dude. Everybody likes that cholo.
Well, I think there's something weird too now where. Like John Jones, he obviously had that fight with Cormier, and it did. They're saying like 850,000 buys. Like all that stuff with him getting arrested and going to jail and crashing the car and the drug test failure. It's all publicity, man. It just makes him a bigger star, and it's like maybe you think it might turn people off, or that's not what draws. But nowadays, like this mainstream attention helps a lot. And a guy like Nate, who's been on Extra and all these different shows and has been on these 1.5 million buy shows, is, you know, after Conor, probably the second biggest star in the company with Ronda gone and Brock out.
And, you know, the Jones fight doing so well really says a lot. It says that, again, it's a sport that is accepted because there was once upon a time, you'd be like, oh my gosh, will this hurt the image? Will people be like, oh, these cage fighters are all like this? And instead, it's on the same level as, well, Ezekiel Elliott's going to get 6 games from the NFL. He'll do his time, and the guy comes back, and everybody's like, okay, they're back. Maria Sharapova, she's back from her drug failure, and we just move on, and we act like that's just part of the world, because it is. That's part of sports these days. And Jones, oh, yeah, he did a little cocaine and had some whatever issues, and that's just life. So, yeah, he's just another famous athlete now.
Frank Mir has agreed to terms with Bellator. They're expected to announce his signing in the next couple of days. Mir's being granted his release from the UFC following his March 2016 loss to Mark Hunt. where Mir tested positive for oral turinabol metabolites in a USDA, USADA drug test. As a result, Mir, who maintains his innocence, is serving a two-year suspension that expires in April 2018. He is not expected to fight for Bellator before then. Kind of a weird deal there because, like, I think about Tom Lawler and the fact that he wanted a release. He had a failure and couldn't get the release. UFC kept him under contract. Why would they release Frank Mir and let him go to Bellator like that?
Lawler is probably pissed him off a little bit, and Mir's been a, you know.
Why? Because he pretended to be the Shockmaster?
Little things like that.
Mir said he was going to murder Brock Lesnar and got pulled from announcing.
One of those is a guy being an alpha male and fucking up, and the other one is some guy doing something that you're knocking off, and he does it again. You're like, all right, now you're annoying. And even if it's not bad, some of these really, really powerful people, annoying is way more of a sin than being bad. Like, being bad can be redeemed.
Right, but why?
Annoying is like, oh, you little turd. Fuck you. We're going to teach you a lesson. Plus, who knows if he's even telling the truth.
But what's the lesson? You can't fight for somebody else. We're going to keep you under contract to us. Like, it's a weird lesson to teach somebody. Like, Lawler, like, I feel would have been perfect in Rise, and he could have had, like, his dumbass entrances, and he probably would have won a lot of points over there.
Nothing.
He can. He's still under contract to UFC.
It's Japan. They don't have to honor it.
Yeah, but the UFC will probably sue him.
Nobody's going to give a shit.
You wouldn't think, but they would have released him if they didn't give a shit. Anyway, Mir's in Bellator now. Technically, he can't fight till April. I can't imagine them ignoring that ruling because that was a USADA test. And I always wonder how the okay, even though it was in Australia.
Yeah, I believe so.
And even though he ate kangaroo meat, and that's what caused
throwing a kangaroo, and now I've got a bit of a, you know, a boomerang in the mix here, and so it's kind of throwing things off. All right, and, you know, I can't be expected to know about kangaroo law. That does raise different issues. I'm just talking about regular use out of protocol. You want to bring in kangaroos? That's fine. I need a little bit of time to prepare, though. That's not fair to expect me to know that. Ins and outs of USADA, fine. Kangaroo law, it's a whole new branch of law. Except there's maritime law, criminal law, kangaroo law. It's just something you have to be an expert in.
You got to read up on how marsupials can affect the human
exactly.
anatomy.
The pouches. If the pouch fits, do you acquit? Do you not acquit? I don't know the rules. You got to figure that shit out.
All right, let's change gears here. Let's talk about racism in the United States.
I'm watching a black guy beat a white guy up. And the white guy's, no, the black guy's name is Bird. And the white guy's name is Wallace. That's appropriate. George Wallace.
Well, I get it. There's a reference. Obviously, Charlottesville is going on, and we touched on that earlier. But even UFC fighters are getting in on this racial stuff. Apparently, Aljamain Sterling and Cody Garbrandt got into it on Twitter, where Garbrandt called Sterling boy multiple times. And it's similar to like what Conor McGregor did with Floyd, called him boy. And obviously, that's got some racial overtones. With a white guy saying it to a black guy, there can be issues there. Garbrandt said on Twitter, "Wait in line, boy," in regards to a title shot Sterling wanted. And Sterling wrote back, "Unless you're KKK, stop calling me boy, motherfucker. You liable to get your shit beat in talking like that. Talk your shit. Don't be asshat."
I like that threat. Hey, you keep saying that, I'm going to beat you up. You're cage fighters, and he's the best in the world. That's kind of a weird threat, and you're not talking to me. Anyways, go on.
Anyway, it went on and on. Sterling's talking about empowering these racist dickheads. I'd beat the fuck out of you. You're a fucking idiot. They kind of went back and forth for a while. Garbrandt wrote, "Dillashaw's next. Sterling just riding high off the biggest win he will ever get. Can't be mad at the boy." So it kept going back and forth. Garbrandt, I don't know. I can't imagine he was saying it in a racist way. But he also might just be a fucking idiot and not understand the reference and kept – he did it more than once.
Well, the subsequent uses were on purpose. I'm sure of that. That was a trick. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. But you would think, like, in this time where people are super sensitive to that shit, you'd be a little more careful.
But I was trying to – I was thinking about this as you're, you know, telling the story, and I'm like, it's one of those things where people are like, you can't call black people boy because it's racist. Like, but it's one of those – it's more like black people will say it's racist than it is racist because I've never heard that used – is in a derogatory manner. I've heard a lot of racial slurs. I've heard a lot of ways, you know, people cut down black people, and they'll like, try to say something like that. But I've never seen like a racist relative yell at the TV and be like, "Oh, shut up, boy!" Like it just.
No, I think it's more like a slave owner.
But here's the thing: that's not racist today. I can't be held accountable. Like,
right.
I understand where black people would, but you know, back in the way back when that was used to keep us in our place and blah blah blah. It's like, yeah, but. Nobody does that today. Like, it just, there's a lot of things that white people will say to black people that are blatantly or, you know, subtly racist. If I said boy, it would be racist because I know about it. I don't think Cody Garbrandt probably knows about it. He's from Cincinnati,
right?
And he's younger, and he lives with, you know, Uriah Faber in California with a bunch of bros. Like, this dude isn't up on race relations. If I asked my mom, I guarantee my mom, the most sensitive liberal lady you got, she wouldn't know. She might be like, maybe I shouldn't say that, but she wouldn't know why. It's just, right. I don't know. I just think the blacks need to stop being so uppity about it.
Well, it depends on the situation. It's like, if Garbrandt is aware of it, he's being a dick and should be called on it. If he's unaware, yeah. I mean, it's totally... depends on his motive and what he was thinking when he wrote it.
The whole problem with you claiming any language is objectively racist because you always have to know what the speaker's intention was, and if you don't know, you can't call it racist. And we should default
right.
to people are not all racist. I mean, that's kind of a weird way to look at the world. It could be true. Maybe it's a safer way to look at the world. Perhaps they're on to something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, essentially, it's innocent until proven guilty, right? That should be what you would assume with everyone all the time, no matter what the situation is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, although, I mean, the President of the United States did kind of go easy on some white supremacists, so maybe they're a little more sensitive the other
yeah.
way. But yeah, you're right.
I mean... obviously, I know you did a show and you talked a lot about this, but what's your whole take on the Charlottesville thing?
I did that show on, I think, Sunday or Monday before Trump had said, like, I don't know, three or four of his different things. So it's like, there's so
yeah.
many, that's the thing, there are so many different hot takes to be had here. Like, there are people who can
right.
just be genuinely angry at the protest, the initial protest, at the response, at the violence, at the killing. And then there's a whole other thing where people are angry about the way that the president responded. Like, they're not – like, it's related to what happened, but it's really kind of just separate because they tie it into, like, the general idea of Trump is not fit to do these things, blah, blah, blah. And so they say, it's me, and they tie that into all this other stuff. It's like, no, what about – can't we all just be angry at the Klansmen running around and – khaki pants for some fucking weird ass reason. I mean, I'm more sympathetic to I would say to the cause of those who want to take down the statue than I may often come across, because I actually do see why that could very easily be offensive. I don't know, it's offensive, but you're sitting there, you're black, you guys really have a fucking statue of the guy that was the chief defender of slavery? Like, holy shit, man. Like,
yeah.
Plus, he's a traitor. They lost. And, like, again, Robert Lee, it's more complicated than that, because everything always is. He loves America, but he's more loyal to Virginia than anything. That's also a time when, you know, people really were more part of a state than they were a country. So I know he's getting in. He was all about, you know, Southerners have this weird thing with honor and all this crap, and he never bought slaves, but he inherited somebody, always freedom, and it was very important as far as reconciliation goes. And I think it's kind of, we are lucky in the sense that our entire frame of reference for bad guys is Hitler, where you're just like, yeah, he clearly is bad. Nobody's going to find any, you know, middle ground there. But I'm sure, you know, a lot of wars, it's a little more nuanced. You know, the American Revolution, it's not just, you know, the English are all evil, because we don't think they're evil today. And I think that people want to think that and go, you know, maybe that's what Lee was. He does represent reconciliation, all this stuff. But at the same time, somebody said, you're not allowed to own people. And he said, fuck you, I'm out of here. I'll kill you if you come after me. So, yeah, if I'm black and I see this guy's statue, I'm going to be like, what? You can't. Why don't you throw up a faceless slave owner and say, here be the spot where, you know. Again, that's what the guy's, that's his legacy. It doesn't matter if he did other things.
Right.
Like, you can do other things and overcome a lot of real bad in your history. I'll say Thomas Jefferson and George Washington come to mind because they've been talked about a lot. Like, they owned some slaves, but they just, some things are so amazing and incredible. You're like, okay, Robert E. Lee, like, your chief defining moment. Like, when everybody else in history, they all have that moment. They're like, are you going to do the right thing or the wrong thing? The founding fathers said, we're going to stand for liberty. We're going to do this. We're going to free ourselves from the tyranny of a monarchy. Yeah, they stood there. They didn't hedge their bets or anything like that. Robert E. Lee, when given the chance, said, yeah, I want slavery to be around. Like, slavery. I'm going to die on this hill. There was nothing else to it. That's it. He was willing to let slavery happen. So, yeah, if he doesn't get a fucking statue, boo fucking who? Put it in, like at the battlefields, things like that. That makes sense. But this is, like, in the public square. Yeah, I feel kind of weird. You know, if, you know, I know there's a statue of Lenin in Seattle. If I was Russian and Jewish, I'd be like, that's really fucking weird, too, dude. Like, let's not do that.
Why is that?
Because Seattle, I almost guarantee it's just because he's a lefty, and people really like to romanticize 20th century left-wing despots. I mean, think about it. There's,
yeah, but he, a lot of people died because of him.
Think about this. Nobody wears a Pinochet t-shirt, but people wear a Che Guevara, or Colin Kaepernick walks around with a Fidel Castro t-shirt on. The hammer and sickle are kind of like a stylish thing that people trot around and don't feel shame about. Like, you know, Russia has like a kitschy factor almost. We kind of like, oh, you know, we see like the Russians or the Americans, but like the A is the hammer and sickle. Like, it's a very stylish thing. Like, we just don't treat it the way that we should. And it's kind of odd, but, you know, it is what it is. And I think the people that put up a statue of Lenin, I don't think that they're bad people. I think that they're doing it for their reason, which is some sort of, you know, we love socialism, and I think they have a good heart.
Does he have some significance to Seattle?
No, Seattle's just very lefty.
No, I don't think he ever
visited Seattle.
There's not one in Boston or Cambridge. You know what I'm saying? I just didn't know if he had. Because what was the thing with doesn't like Saddam Hussein or something have a key to Detroit or something crazy I didn't know if like maybe Lenin had some sort of connection. They spent money to
existed
Seattle or something.
Like, seriously, like Lenin was, you know, about 100 years ago. A little before that, and you know, San Francisco was the biggest city in the entire West Coast, and it burned to the ground in 1907. Right. Like, the West Coast really only kind of developed after the 50s, all thanks to Hollywood.
Right.
According to Batman.
The whole Charlottesville thing is crazy, because when you get down to it, like, the whole thing started, the whatever you want to call them, alt-right, neo-Nazis, whatever they are, were there because of a statue being taken down. It's like, to me, it's like, that has no impact on your life. Like, if you're going to march for something, march for something that matters. Like, I think they've got, like, this slippery slope argument that it's taken away, like, white culture or some bullshit. It's a statue. It's an
Robert
object.
Lee, he
it means
slavery.
Nothing.
He's a slave.
I agree. No, but just, I'm just trying to say, in the scheme of things, it's like, why are you even there marching for something so
racist.
Stupid? I get it, but right. It's just bizarre. It doesn't seem like a good
it
reason
is kind of
to march. Like,
it's
if you're going to march, have a good reason.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. But what really is lost on this, it'll never actually get the light of day, is how fucking crazy all this really is, because all this, I get the impression, started because Charlottesville has their city government, and the deputy mayor is black. And my impression is, if you're ever going to be, like, not like the black candidate, like, he's a good one to not like, cozies up with Black Lives Matter a little too much, things like that. Either way, like, he, and then this guy, this black guy, he made it his mission to take down this statue. Like, this was his cause. And the guy, guy who, like, started the Unite the Right thing, who's, he was all, like, you know, this is, like, a personal thing. I think it was just, like, him, these two guys fighting it out, almost like in some sort of, like, classic sitcom, mix-up type of deal. But all of a sudden, like, the shit got real crazy. And I think that, I suspect that the guy who started all this, he's probably one of those guys where he's like an online racist Nazi type of guy. Like, it sounds kind of good, like, he's never confronted with it. But if he actually really sits there and, you know, you see these actual fucking guys show up with swastikas tattooed on their head, and they got pitchforks and, like, actual, like, flaming guns and all this, you go, wait, hold on, what am I doing? This isn't, I'm not role playing. Like, it's like you, like, they snap into the real world. They go, oh, fuck. Because, like, I saw him, like, try to get that press conference, and he was chased away. And I,
that
I
was
kinda,
crazy. That was,
like,
fucking
kinda,
crazy.
Like, I thought it was kind of funny, but I kind of got the impression, like, when he was speaking, he was really kind of like, what the, like, you just know he wanted to say, guys, I had no idea it was going to be like this. Like, I applied for my thing.
Right.
We did this a couple of years ago. We had, like, five guys show up. All of a sudden, somebody got ran over by a fucking car. I'm scared. Like, I saw some video of some other guy at the rally. It was some alt-right Nazi, and he's, like, basically crying. And he's like, I didn't know what's going on, but, like, you're very shaken by the whole thing. And I really do think there's – I feel like a lot of people – I've seen it more on the right, but it seems like there's a lot of people going, well, hold on, guys. We can just stop this for a second here. Like, somebody died. Oh, what?
Right.
And I think they're not as true to the cause as – you know, the Antifa people, you know, they fucking shot a congressman, and we all just like, oh, okay, we moved on, because Trump, I don't know what he did that week. Who knows?
But don't you think, like, say the Heather Heyer, I apologize, I don't even know how to pronounce her name, but if she hadn't been run over, if that guy hadn't driven down the street, it was one, granted, a lot of these people at this rally are probably a little unhinged, but that guy was totally mentally ill, beat his mother, has a bunch of arrests, young kid, early 20s, highly impressionable, which a lot of both of these people, Antifa, alt-right, are young, early 20s, impressionable, want to have a voice, and if that had never happened, like, if that one guy hadn't gone there that day, this story would be totally different.
Yeah, nobody would care. It would have just been...
I mean, it still would have been a news story, just
based
on the video.
Nobody would miss the president.
And then Right, but them chanting about, you know, Jews taking over and faggots and all that stuff. Like, you watch that, and it's just like, it's like gross. It reminds you of Nazi Germany, and you're like, oh, my God, what are these people doing?
I give a lot of credit to Vice for that, because I've seen, you know, the clip. I haven't watched the whole, they call it a documentary. But, I mean, some of the shots they got from that Friday night march, like, they're really important, because they're so good that it looks like it had to be fake. Like, is this real? Mm-hmm. Could this? I mean, it wasn't just what I'm seeing, but it was so well shot. But, you know, I have no reason to believe it's not real. But seeing that really, you know, is somebody that can sit here and, again, abstractly be like, I know objectively, like, none of this really matters. The whole country's not filled with racist or anti-fascist people. Like, it's just these weirdos that acted out. But, man, when you see that shit and these people marching about the Jews and just talking about, like, and like blood and soil, and I'm just going, it was just scary. Just seeing those guys, I'm like, I know it doesn't pose an existential threat, but fuck me, man. If I was in that town, oh, I'd be terrified. Like, and I really wish that's what it was. I wish this was a story of these racist assholes showed up and this regular people like, yeah, fuck these guys. But instead it was, you know, the same old group showed up who protested people on the right, and it wasn't, they weren't the racist people. They were just, you know, right-wing college kids going to see Ben Shapiro, and then they show up and protest this, like, oh, but I can't really be, like, I don't want to give you guys a lot of credit. It's kind of like a blind nut with a squirrel, but guess what? You got that fucking, I'm sorry, a blind squirrel with a nut. But you got that nut there, man. You got it. I can't say you did anything wrong on that day, because those are some scary fucking Nazis, man. Shit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's weird, too, because, I mean, I try and listen to both sides, and I'm more interested in stuff like this than pretty much everything, just to see how people react from, like, a sociological point of view, and why people think what they think, and what would make them go march, and what are these people thinking when they go there to march about this Robert E. Lee statue? What's their logic behind it? Do they have any? Are they just crazy people? Are all of those people insane? And I think that's kind of what Trump was saying. Like, some of them are very fine people, but when you see that video, you're like, holy shit, these people are fucked. And even the people who might be very fine, if you're down there with those people, you're a fucking asshole.
That
you just
was
are.
One of the like,
you are.
Trump, like, I actually got very bothered by it, by most of Trump's reaction to this, because for all of his faults, the one thing Trump always had going for him was, you'd be like, you know, like him or not, the guy just shoots from the mouth, right? You know, he shoots from the hip, and he says, you know, Islamic extremists, I hate you guys, you're evil. Hey, guess what, North Korea? I'm going to, you know, fury and fire and all this stuff. And it's too bad all this happened, because guess what? Donald Trump whooped North Korea's ass. He went out there and he looked right at Kim Jong-un and he goes, guess what, pussy? I will whoop your ass. I will blow you up. And the response was, okay, we're sorry. We're not going to do anything this time, but maybe next time. It's like he won that shit hardcore because he spoke that way.
Right.
And then it comes out here and the Donald Trump just talks about everything else and be like, man, what a bunch of racist morons. I hate these people. But it was too equivocating, and I know what he was trying to do. I think it's like you were saying.
Right.
He was looking at the idea behind what was going on and knowing, as we could all imagine, that there are people that would not want the statue taken down who are very good people. You know, there are black people that don't want the statue taken down. They just like it, whatever. So he's probably thinking of the people like that, and thinking, well, maybe this is something that got out of hand. It's not really excusable because he's president. He's not allowed to be like, I didn't have all the information. Like, dude, you're the president. You can't say, well, Fox didn't tell me this yet. You tell Fox. You tell CNN. You're the president. You should be able to, like, call somebody like, so, you guys watching the news? Who did that? And then somebody goes, let me make two calls, and they go, and suddenly that guy's head is on your desk because you're the president. So, Donald, I think he got too caught up in it, and I think he's so defensive right now that he's expecting a fight on this. Like, when people are saying, what was your response to this? yeah, maybe they're attacking him. Maybe they're implying that he has connections to all these people. And if you're him, it probably does suck. Because think about it. If he, you know, is truly innocent and not a racist, for like the past 2 years, somebody's been calling you a racist all the time. After a while, you're like, shut the fuck up. I'm tired of it. But you're also the president. And the president gives us a statement on everything. You know, presidents give statements on high school girls winning a volleyball tournament, state tournament. Like, that's part of your job. And don't act defensive when you're asked to do it, because then I'm like, what the fuck's going on? Like, I'm really watching this going, dude, this isn't cool. Like I know why you wanted to do it, and especially, like, the second time I heard him really kind of go off the cuff, I'm like, I get it, and I know why. I know where it's going to appeal. It's going to appeal to a certain group of people, and they're the people that elected him. And maybe he's right for speaking right to him. And I've been trying to figure out.
Hello? I think I lost you. I cannot hear you anymore. Hello? Hello. Cannot hear you. At all. I don't know if I'm still here. I mean, I know I'm here. Okay.
You're running around in ski masks trying to blow things up? What did you think was going to happen?
Hello?
Hey.
I don't know what's going on.
I just had radio silence. We're talking and then just disappeared.
I could hear you fine.
It was really weird. Because I could see it was still going. The time was still going. But I could not hear you at all.
I could hear you completely. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I'm not editing any of that out. So,
good. Well, I was hoping either you couldn't hear me or you were still talking and I was just randomly interrupting you out of the blue. And
I started singing.
Oh, good. That'll be something to look forward to. Hey, bottom line with all this stuff for me is that people suck with areas of gray and nuance. And, like, I don't have a problem with, like, Antifa or whatever protesting, like, Milo or whatever. But when it gets, like, violent, he's not allowed to speak, I'm not into that because it obviously encroaches on freedom of speech. And I'm into freedom of speech. That's a thing. But like we're saying, them protesting these guys is more legitimate because these guys pose, like are a real threat. They're racist, terrible, shitty human beings. But Antifa can't determine who is truly evil and who might just be really conservative. And I think it goes the same on both sides.
Well, that's one of the things that, obviously, if you're on the right, you're concerned about. And, you know, some of these things I think aren't really going to happen. But Nancy Pelosi came out, and there's this, like, group that is going to do some sort of they call it a prayer rally in San Francisco. And they're being called alt-right and white supremacists and things like that. But one of the guys was on Tucker Carlson tonight, and, like, the guy who organized it, he's not white. He's ethnic of some sort. He didn't really say what it was, but I think he's, like, Latino-looking. And he's like, we have 8 speakers, and 7 of them are not white. And, again, yes, I know that people on the right will play that game. They trot out their favorite black guy or their favorite woman to kind of speak, and, oh, that kind of gives me legitimacy. But here's the thing. If you're a racist organization, you don't worry about trying to get legitimacy with the black people. Like, the people of the Klan aren't sitting there going, well, we'll have the one token. They don't even want a token. Like, if you think, I need to have a token,
right,
you care, at least. And these people
right.
at least want tokens. That said, right. I want to see if I can get this to play. I loaded it up. Let's see if you can hear this.
Okay.
You moron. scheme of trying to blow things up? What did you think was going to happen?
Nothing yet.
Damn it. Well, I heard it.
It
worked that one time I did it, but I've upped it. It was a quote from, I ripped it, from Fight Club, one of my favorite lines ever, when Bob gets shot in the head after they were trying to blow up some Starbucks-looking art. And he's laying there on the table, and he's bleeding. And one of the guys goes, "Fucking pigs, I hate them." And Edward Norton's character looks at him, and he goes, "You're running around in ski masks, blowing things up. What did you think was going to happen?"
Right.
And with all this stuff in Charlottesville, I'm just like, guys, all of your, again, I've called them LARPers, you guys are just running around. This was going to happen. If you think that these people are truly Nazis, why are you surprised that Nazis kill innocent people? They're Nazis. Like, you don't show up and protest Hitler, and then, like, if Hitler kills a black guy, be like, "I can't believe he did that." Like, why are you protesting him if you didn't think he was going to do that?
Right.
Stop poking fucking racist bulldogs.
The one thing that irks me a little bit is the whole Antifa thing and saying they're, like, on the same level as, like these Nazi fuckers walking down the street. Like, Antifa is protesting them and seeing it run. To say, like, granted, like, I don't excuse the violence. I don't condone trying to get people not allowed to speak. But they're trying to do what they think is the right thing against a group that's clearly morally wrong. And granted, sometimes they don't always hit the nail on the head and they don't do it properly. But I think in their heart of hearts, they're more right than the Nazis.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. It's like,
but I'm just saying all these conservative commentators compare Antifa to, I don't even want this group because I don't really want to call them alt-right because that includes, like, a lot of people, and I'm not even sure how you define alt-right, which Trump was also trying to say. I don't know what the definition of alt-right is. I know better what Antifa is, but whether they're Nazis or there's, like, a shift of political commentary where it's, like, your Milos are these really, really right-wing incendiary people. Like, I think they should be allowed to speak, and I think everybody should be allowed to speak for that matter, but to compare Antifa to these extreme right-wing racists is just crazy to me.
No, I think what's so many, again, it's like I said way at the beginning, I think, there's so many different layers to all this with people being able to be outraged, and I kind of go back and forth and think about it because, like, you know, I mean, again, yeah, they're Nazis. Like, everybody's a good guy compared to a Nazi. Even commies are good guys compared to Nazis. They're the most perfect evil bad guy ever. It's just like, somebody's like, how'd you create it? Like, well, what they're going to do, they're going to have weird uniforms, and all they're going to do is kill people for no reason. Like, that's what they're known for. They're known for just killing somebody for no reason. So you oppose people that want to kill for no reason, you're the good guy.
Right.
And no, they're not equivalent. They're not on the same level. I think what you're seeing is people on the right, I'll say the Milo types, who are not Nazis. They're me if I really turned up the volume and was really looking for, like, that kind of attention. They're trolls. And I think that people rightfully are going, like, look, if there's a quote-unquote war, what you've had is you've had 10 battles. The first 9 were between the crazy, like, I'll call them the cool guy, right-wing, Gavin McGinnis, Proud Boys types, who are right-wing trolls, but they're not racist. And they've been fighting Antifa, and they're in the quote-unquote, pardon the pun, they're in the right, because they just want to speak, and Antifa wants to stop them from speaking.
Right.
But then Antifa, on the 10th time, got actual Nazis, like they've been calling everybody, and now people are like, I think they're afraid that it's going to legitimize Antifa, and it really shouldn't, because they're a shitty group, but, man, it doesn't matter how shitty you are, you're going against Nazis. You always win, and you get to have your day in the sun. Like, I don't have to like it, but guess what, you know, if the other team hits a grand slam at the bottom of the ninth, all you can do is sit there and watch them round the bases. They won. Like, you know, if the Proud Boys had been out there and they had, what would you say? If they had been protesting, what would be an equivalent? Like, if they had been doing something against crazy commie professors at Yale, and then the people in Yale came out, and it turns out they were actually legitimate communists who had sold secrets to the commies and had been murdering non-communist dissenters, you'd be like, oh, well, they got that one right, I guess. But it doesn't mean that they're, you know, always right.
Right.
Except that they are always right. But, yeah.
They're shades of gray. Ric Flair's in the hospital. Have you heard about this?
Yeah. I actually wrote his obituary.
I believe he's still alive.
I wrote like 200 words just in case. I'm like, well, he's going to die, but I was going to... It was Friday night. I was doing something where I knew I wouldn't be by my computer. And so I'm like, I'm going to get this ready. If it comes out, I can just hit publish on my phone. That's fine. Ric Flair's going to die. And now he had like colon cancer, butt surgery, and
he's
still.
Yeah, apparently he's still in intensive care, but he's in an Atlanta hospital. He's been there a couple days, I think since Sunday. But yeah, the details are a little sketchy. Some reports were saying it had something to do with his heart, and other ones are saying colon surgery, like some sort of blockage or something, which does not sound pleasant. But at the same time, it doesn't really sound like something that would kill you necessarily. But yeah, he's still in the hospital. And
oh, he's going to die.
Well, eventually, but you think, like, shortly, it's imminent?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, my friend, I actually house sat for her parents. Her dad...
Had butthole issues also?
Sorry. I'm actually biting a hangnail. They were scheduled to go on vacation, and he instead went to the hospital. It seems like, you know, he didn't feel right in the chest type of deal or whatever. And he's had, like, a heart attack before. And the next thing you know, a weird coincidence, he has pretty much what the rally puggle had as far as his esophagus is fucking up, and it's got a little tear in it, and there's fluid is draining into his lungs. So, yes, he's got what my dog died from. But they did that, then all of a sudden, like, he's still in the ICU 2 days later, and now, like, well, he can't pee now, and... Now they got this thing because you know he can't breathe at night, so they got this machine on him for that. Oh, and now they're not going to move him for the next week to see if this thing will heal that way. It's like he goes in with one thing, and like within a day, they've made him way worse. If he had just not gone, I'm sure it would have got worse as it is. That one problem, but it seems like you go to the hospital, it's like they just poke you a lot, and then all of a sudden like, oh, you got a lot of holes in you. You're like, well, yeah, you know, shit. Kept poking me. So Ric Flair's going to die. He's probably when there's something really bad, and they're just going to make it worse.
I think you have a weird fear of doctors and hospitals. But his fiance posted an update somewhere, I think on Facebook. She wrote, I took Rick to the hot. Do you know his fiance is current?
His fiance
is Fifi, who was like his valet in WCW in 1993. Anyway. I took Rick to the hospital Friday night with severe abdominal pain. From that moment on, it all seems like a nightmare. Multiple organ problems. Not to go into too many details, I want everyone to know he still needs prayers as he's still in critical condition. And no, he did not have colon surgery. It was another surgery. I don't know how the media comes up with their stories. I've been by his side since Friday and will continue to make sure he's getting the best care possible.
Listen to what she wrote there. Look at that thing. Really, I mean this sincerely, appreciate and understand everything she wrote there.
Okay.
That's why Donald Trump is president. Look at what she's writing. She's sitting there with her fiance, which is absurd because he's like in his 60s on his 15th wife and 38th STD or whatever. Like, what are they doing getting married? But whatever. They're getting married. He's in the hospital. He's on death's door.
Mm-hmm.
This man might die, and she has to make sure to tell everybody it wasn't. He had nothing to do with his butt. He's totally okay. Like, that is Trump in a nutshell. no matter what it is, it could be like, yeah, you know, racism's really bad. Don't worry. Like, there are some people, though, that really like it. Like, it's not everybody's really bad. It's like, dude, just say the most honest, blatant thing here. Like, lady, is he alive or is he dead? We're not all sitting here. Rick's got weird butt stuff going on here.
Speaking of weird butt stuff, Tiger Woods' DUI arrest information has come out. He had Vicodin, Dilaudid, Xanax, Ambien, and THC weed found in his system at the time of the arrest.
I don't know what kind of man would ever do all those things. It's ridiculous. You read those. To me, the one that really stands out is the laudanum. I mean, or Dilaudid. I think that's real, real heavy shit. Like, they ain't screwing around drugs. That's not smoking some weed or even, you know, taking some Vicodin. Like, that's not your normal street party type of thing. Like, that's some Michael Jackson level territory there.
He's got a bad back from golfing so much.
He might actually just have that much pain and be that screwed up because he came from a bar and had no alcohol in his system.
Right.
So it's not like he was actually going out there and, you know, if he's being self-destructive, you'd expect him to be drinking, but he's not. So I think, you know, he's getting high in his own way and he's probably delusional about some of it, but I also think that guy's probably just really fucked up.
Yeah, he does sound like he's not in a good frame of mind, at least back on May 29th. What day of the week was that? Do we know May 29th? What day of the week?
It sounds like a Friday.
May 29th was a Monday. He was doing that on a Monday
night. Memorial Day?
Technically, yeah, it would have been Memorial
Day.
Rough weekend.
That's a weekend activity there. Like, well, no. If you're Tiger, that happens on a Wednesday. I feel like the thing with his wife happened like on a Tuesday after he returned home from Hooters. It's just poor Tiger. He's so Florida through and through. Like, he really is like, just it should be nicer than it is, but it's just trash at the core.
He released a statement when this came out, too. He said, recently I've been trying on my own to treat my back pain and a sleep disorder, including insomnia. But I realize now it was a mistake to do this without medical assistance. I am continuing to work with my doctors, and they feel I've made significant progress. I remain grateful for the amazing support that I continue to receive and for the family and friends that are assisting me. He's going to go down as, like, you don't want to say tragic, but stories, but it was like, talk about a guy who was incredible and on top of the world and the best in the world at what he did and then just crashed and burned, man.
I've never seen anything like it. Like, the closest I would come up with was, I think, like Michael Jackson, but his was kind of like a slow thing because he was so weird. And then, like, he was kind of like, he became white, and you're like, he's kind of a different guy, and like, you knew he's kind of, it's just kind of, like, he actually, like, he lured us into his world like he did children. Kind of just made it seem kind of normal. Next thing you know, you're like, oh, he's molesting kids. Like, that came out of nowhere. I think Bill Cosby is very close.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
But Cosby had kind of alienated people because he was willing, like, he would come out and be like, you know, the big problem for the black community is black kids. Like, he sounded kind of conservative on some issues. So, like, he lost a little credibility, but he did just overnight go. But it's kind of like he's this old, and the older you are, the more people are like, eh, I don't know. But Tiger, man, he's in this fucking prime, winning everything, and all of a sudden, he just went down, and it was so sad the way he went down. He didn't go down like a great man goes down. This isn't, you know, Donald Trump goes down, he goes down like a champion. He goes down defending the KKK or being bribed by Russia. These are big things. Tiger Woods went down for fucking chicks at Hooters. That is so sad. That is what everybody in Florida does. And he's so Florida, he couldn't help it. He lost everything because he's a quote-unquote sex addict because he boned. And you know what? He must be. He really does have something wrong with him because he had a gorgeous wife. And I know, you know, it's not always about looks and this and that, but, like, he was going to Hooters. And it was habitual. It was like, it was a lot of Hooters and like some other hot chicks sprinkled in. It's like, it was only Hooters. He wasn't going to anything else. He didn't have like a, what's his face? Not Wiener, the other one there, a Spitzer in California. Like, well, you know, she was a pretty high level, you know, like a $1,000 a night deal. Like, oh, I kind of get that. Like, no, it's Hooters girl. What the fuck, Tiger? That's your kryptonite? And it's so like, oh, the black man just couldn't help with the white woman. And, oh, boy, that just, and all of a sudden nobody gives a shit about golf anymore.
Yeah, what, it was a very short window there. Yeah, Tiger is certainly a sad case at this point. What else do we have going on in the world? Game of Thrones has been leaked online. Apparently this is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
So what happened? HBO, so the two versions of HBO, I guess, HBO Nordic and HBO España accidentally uploaded the next episode of Game of Thrones. And usually, what's it air, Sunday night?
Yeah, it airs Sunday at 9 Eastern.
Okay, and then this came out 5 days prior to when it's supposed to broadcast, and everybody's freaking out.
Yeah, and I don't, it adds a little bit more. It's before this, though. You know, there were hackers had grabbed episodes of this season and had previously released one ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And so now this is kind of like, it's probably an innocent mistake, but still kind of like, what a weird thing to do with a show that's reaching its zenith and everybody's enthralled. It's kind of like, they're really paying off big so far, where everybody's getting like, wow, after all these years, I'm really seeing all the badass shit. Like, they're really doing it. And now it's getting, like, released early, and like, oh, yeah, everybody wants to see it. We're kind of this weird era where people are used to binge-watching great shows, and HBO's still holding on to releasing it, which is so weird. So you get something that everybody can water cooler talk about this thing, and then it gets leaked, and then, oh, John over there, he knows how to use the fancy computer shit, and he got to see it early. Well, fuck that motherfucker. Let's take him outside and beat him with a stack of billy clubs after work.
That would be one way to do it. Oh, I forgot to mention, this could be LeBron's final season in Cleveland. Sources are saying his relationship with the owners is beyond repair. Do you buy this story?
Yeah.
Is it the same owners that were there when he was originally with the team? Like, he left, came back.
Yeah, right? No, it was the same owners the whole time.
So he knew them before and went back to the team and knew what he was going back to, no?
Yeah, he knew. When he left, the owner, Dan Gilbert, very famously wrote an email trashing LeBron. And it was written in Comic Sans script, and like a teenager would do. It's just so stupid and petty, and we'll win a championship before he does, and all this crap. But then LeBron came back. He made good. The cynic says he did it for some sort of marketing thing. I think it's really cool that he did come back to his small market hometown and win them their first championship. Like, that's a really cool thing. LeBron seems to kind of got his head screwed on that way. And then, you know, he gets last season, he goes back there, and he plays his heart out. The guy is just a fucking god out there. Then he comes up against the Warriors. And you just look at it, you go, it's impossible. Right. Nobody can beat them. Like, this is a joke. Nobody's going to beat them. And I almost feel like, because a lot of the rumors are LeBron would go to Los Angeles. And I always thought that was kind of odd. Because you would think, okay, he doesn't want to be in Cleveland. He'd go to New York or someplace where, you know, New York could work, they clear some cap space, he's friends with Carmelo, Porzingis, that's not a bad deal there, and it's a big market, he just wants to be in a big market, but then he still had the chance to, you know, compete in the East, which is weaker, and he gets to the finals, and, you know, anything could happen, but no, I think the Warriors are so fucking dominant that he's just like, I'll just go to L.A. and make money and be in the Lakers for a little while. And that's so demoralizing. And that's why he's not Michael Jordan, because Michael wouldn't do that.
Correct. What else? Drake, the rapper.
Boy.
Yeah, not a fan, I take it.
I don't really know. I just saw somebody say Drake the fuckboy online. I'm like, that sounds really funny.
He is a little more emotional and sensitive than most rappers. He also sings a lot. But this is the first time in 8 years he has not been on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. He has a 430-week streak on the singles chart that has never been touched before in the history of Billboard.
I mean, good for him, I guess. I feel like it's one of those records that I don't know how the Billboard charts work or anything like that. We're in an mm-hmm. era now, obviously, where traditional charting isn't really the same, especially when you go with music, where, you know, what does it mean to have a charting song? Like, it used to be, once upon a time, it was like, you were the biggest song. You were making all the money. Nowadays, it's more imperative to be the dude with the, you know, most YouTube watch views or that SoundCloud streams or whatever the... whatever is more important these days than, I don't know, album.
Well, I think what happens a lot is people go away for a while so you don't get sick of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like even Connor does it. He'll go away for 6 months and then come back. But I think there's a burnout factor with a lot of stars where they're out there, out there, out there. They put an album out, they tour, they put out a couple singles, they'll be on a couple other people's songs to cross-promote, whatever, and then they go away for a year. Yeah. Then they put out another album. But he just managed to keep putting out, whether it was just singles or being on someone else's track or whatever it might be. But 8 years in a row on the Billboard Top 100 is pretty crazy. I guess Lil Wayne and Rihanna rank second and third for most consecutive weeks.
Okay, so yeah, and that
it's a more modern thing.
That says it all then. Yeah, which it's not just a more modern thing, but it's something that is always going to be dominated by the R&B and rap community because there's so many of those guys. Just the nature of the medium is, you know, they just appear on somebody's track and they do this and that and. So it's not quite the same as, you know, if the Beatles do it. It's like, well, it's just these four guys only doing one type of thing. It's like, oh, that's pretty good. It's like, no, Drake isn't really the focal point of everything. Like, he's just kind of assisting a little bit.
Right. It's still an impressive run considering people haven't got sick of him or he hasn't got arrested or been in jail or something happening where people are like, fuck this guy. He's still popular.
He's the safe black guy for white people.
He's also Canadian.
Exactly. So he's let's face it, he's whiter than I am.
You shouldn't look in the mirror again. We were talking about wine and booze earlier, but we should talk a little bit about restaurants. There's an All Cheetos restaurant pop-up coming to Brooklyn. This is a restaurant that is only serving items that include Cheetos in some fashion. Would that interest you?
No.
It's already sold out.
I mean, setting aside the fact that, like, I actually just ate Cheetos 2 weeks ago because my brother had them in, he and his wife now, they had, like, little goodie bags for people staying at the hotel. Like, here's a water bottle of water and this thing. Like, they had Cheetos in there. I'm like, all right. Otherwise, I can't remember the last time I ever ate Cheetos. Like, they're fine, but...
Right.
Fuck you, you hipster motherfuckers. Like, really? You're going to serve only Cheetos? Ooh! Like, yeah, you do only grilled cheese or only hamburgers? Like, yeah, that makes sense. Only Cheetos? No, the world eats only Cheetos. It's a side. It's something you snack on. And you don't prepare Cheetos in any way different unless you're just trying to do it because you're a dickhead.
Let me explain a little more. You might not be giving this a chance yet. Dishes all include the synthetic snack, like perfectly fried green tomatoes that come with a white Cheetos crust and a Cheetos Sweetos crusted cheesecake.
Who's demanding a menu where a synthetic snack is the focal point? Nobody says, I can't wait to have some synthetic food. For fuck's sake, it's not even real food. It doesn't exist. You're eating plastic or something.
I don't know, but as it is, it's sold out. Apparently there's enough people who want to go in and check out this Cheetos menu.
That's why Trump's winning.
I picture he's orange like the Cheetos.
Fuck yeah, Donald Trump liked Cheetos before anybody liked Cheetos. In fact, he was the inspiration for Chester the Cheeto, the cheetah. Like, that was all Donald Trump.
I also saw
that kind of does seem Trumpian, doesn't he? Trump is a 1980s cartoon spokes character.
Like the cheetah with the glasses, you mean?
Yeah.
The sunglasses?
Yeah. Chester Cheetah.
Is that his name, Chester?
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Authorities say an Alabama man whacked his twin brother with an aluminum baseball bat because he didn't want to share his tacos. The News Courier reports that 19-year-old Tyler Dukes of Athens, Alabama, was arrested by Limestone County Sheriff's deputies Thursday and charged with second-degree domestic violence. Criminal complaint states that Dukes' twin brother and grandmother brought food home with them, but Dukes became irate because he didn't want to share tacos and didn't get a drink he wanted. Deputies say he hit his twin brother in the back and the head with a bat, cutting the twin deeply. Is that something you would ever do to your brother?
Yeah. Actually, so, when Brian and I were kids, I don't know what we were fighting about. We were fighting. I remember the living room, and it went to like a front hall type of thing. And I remember hopping over a couch, like leaping it, as if I was a hurdler. And I hurdled it, and I was running. And as I was running away, I was struck in the back between my shoulder blades. And I went down in a heap, and I looked over, and there was a wooden axe that we got at medieval times. And Brian had thrown it and smacked me right between the shoulder blades. I could have died. So I could see this happening, yeah.
Okay.
Also, this is one of those things where, as dumb as it sounds, kind of, it is criminal, but it's just like throughout most of history, if something like this happens, you just be like, well, it's kind of like a quirky, footnote. Like it's kin. It's people within the family doing something to each other. They should police their own because we all know it's not malicious. Or if it is, that's just how those boys are.
The guy, Dukes, later told the deputy that his twin always disrespected me.
Again, we laugh, but I just read this memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, by J.D. Vance. He actually went to Yale Law School, but he grew up in Kentucky and Ohio in the Rust Belt era. And he talked about this hillbilly culture and how, like, you really would into a genuine fight and assault someone if they insulted your mother. And so we hear this and we kind of laugh at it. It is stupid, but he's talking about like, he's kind of like growing out of this and his wife helped him a lot. He goes, but I remember one time when she was really proud of me because I had listened to her, but what happened was I was in traffic and a guy cut me off and then we stopped and I was ready to get out of the car and go beat the shit out of him for the perceived slight. My wife was proud of me because I didn't do it. I'm like, okay, I think I'm dealing with a different type of people here.
Have you ever been part of like a jury trial?
Not to the trial itself, no.
Okay, so Harper's Magazine published a transcript from the jury selection portion of Martin Shkreli's fraud trial. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't, but I'm really excited.
Okay, and we'll close on this. So basically, there's a transcript of the interviews with the jurors or whatever you call it. So I'm going to some choice ones here.
I got it, yeah.
It says that the purpose of jury selection is to ensure fairness and impartiality in this case. If you think that you could not be fair and impartial, it is your duty to tell me. All right, juror number one. Juror number one says, I'm aware of the defendant and I hate him. The judge says, I'm sorry. The juror number one says, I think he's a greedy little man. That juror was excused. Moving on to juror number 144. The question is, have you heard anything that would affect your ability to decide this case with an open mind? Can you do that? Juror number 144 says, I don't think I can because he kind of looks like a dick. You are juror number 144, and we will excuse you. Come forward, juror number 155. Your Honor, totally he is guilty, and in no way can I let him slide out of anything because, okay, is that your attitude toward anyone charged with a crime who has not been proven guilty? No, it's my attitude towards his entire demeanor, what he has done to people. All right, we're going to excuse you, sir.
I bet.
And then the guy goes, he also disrespected the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, the fucking heroes. Oh, shit. I wonder if that's something. Is that federal court or New York?
I don't know.
I wonder if there's something quirky going on there where they have some just massive cattle call for jurors. Because,
usually they're weeded out earlier, yeah.
Well, it's just like to have that many people who would kind of be flippant and funny is weird. And also, to be so, again, it could be a New York thing, maybe to be more outspoken. Like, I can't ever imagine hearing that here. But also, I'm kind of surprised at the number of people that know who he is.
Yeah.
Like, I know the story kind of caught on, but if you just said the name, I feel like my mom would be like, who? Be like, exactly.
Juror number 10 was also good. The only thing I'd be impartial about is what prison this guy goes to.
Yeah, this is way too good. This has to be set up. No way that many people have good lines lined up for this guy. Come on.
Juror number 144, tell us what you have heard. I heard through the news of how the defendant changed the price of a pill by upselling it. I heard he bought an album from the Wu-Tang Clan for $1 million. The question is, have you heard anything that would affect your ability to decide this case with an open mind? Can you do that? I don't think I can because he kind of looks like a dick.
I mean, who does that in front of a judge? That's insane. I mean, you should be held in contempt for that. You can't say dick in a courtroom.
Juror number 28, I don't like this person at all. I just can't understand why he would be so stupid as to take an antibiotic, which HIV people need, and jack it up 5,000%. I would honestly, like, seriously like to go over there. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if some of that could just be that they have to explain the case a little bit because of the notoriety. And even if you haven't heard about it, there's no way to explain the case besides, you know, he jacked up an AIDS drug. And people just hear that and go, what, do you have your fucking mind? What? I'm going to fucking put you in jail right away. He's never going to get a fair trial. This should be a first.
Juror number 28. I can't tell if he is stupid or greedy. I just can't understand. It's pretty good. It's good stuff.
That's good. I got to find this shit and sleep with it.
It's a good bedtime story. I think on that note, that's all I've got.
That's all I got. Next week is show number 100. Nothing special will probably happen.
You should do something.
I thought about it, but I don't know what to do.
Just pick something and do it.
We'll see.
What's so hard about that?
There's nothing to do.
You could come up with something.
Just an arbitrary number, anyway. It doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, but people like round numbers and things like
that. Anybody that stupid has already been turned off by my evil. So.
All right. On that note, thank you for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. Check us out on Twitter, halfguarded, halfguarded.com. There's a Facebook page. There's an Instagram. There's all sorts of stuff out there. You just got to go look for it. Talk to you next week.
Normal. Normal. Come on, guys. Normal. That's nothing. Normal. Two legs. Two arms. Normal.
I think every time he watches that last fight, you know, I'm under his skin. I mean, every time you watch memes of him getting held by Cain Velasquez crying, you know, that gets under his skin. So
is your, like,
my
hatred?
Mere existence gets under his skin.
the bad gimmicks he's given that's ruined potentially good talent's careers, the bad writing that he's done that's ruined, you know, promotions possibly compete with Vince, the stupid shit that he did when he was with Vince that he takes credit for, you know, the big boom period when there's Steve Austin and The Rock and a network quality production facility and Jim Ross, the best announcer in the history of wrestling, and all of these tools that he had at his disposal, and, you know, he was writing fucking midgets and people painted fucking colors and everything, and takes credit for the big, it just, the whole thing.